Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Actually, it's Slaggy McWaggy 2 Innocent Sin. Thank you very much.
Welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Today is June 21st, 2026, and this is GameBuoy Podcast Episode 194, Summer Game Fest Side A. This week, we're going to be talking about not E3, everyone's favorite time of year for game trailers, news, and conferences. We will be presenting this discussion in two parts. The first will consist of the headline Summer Game Fest event, as well as Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo's press events, which we will handle chronologically. And then the second will cover the myriad sideshows, showcases, and spin-off events. Ooh. I also want to note, of course, these events all happened now a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. We had meant to record this episode a little more contemporaneous to when these events had occurred. The thing is, we do have lives outside of this show, and this show is something we do as a hobby because we like it and are passionate about it. So as a result, real life has to come first. In this specific case, though, we ended up getting some really valuable kind of retrospective perspective on the actual presentations and sort of the state of things. So it ended up, I think, being for the best that we can actually have a little bit more of a complete conversation about what these three showcases for the big three really meant and what their futures look like a little more fully than we could have had if this episode had recorded when we had intended it to. So I'm a little bit happy for that serendipitous happenstance. With all of that having been said, that's what we have on deck here today. So before we get started and talk about some games news, Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
Hot Topic is the way that we rhyme. Hot Topic is the way that we rhyme. Hot Topic is the way that we rhyme.
Yeah, so this first one is the next 100 Days Xbox Reset Memo. This is a memo that was published by the CEO of Xbox, Asha Sharma, and the executive VP, Matt Booty. It's a very piratical name. So this was fresh off of their Summer Game Fest showcase. Pretty much right after they did that, it was a couple days later that they posted this memo, Next 100 Days Xbox Reset. So it kind of started off with some of their, I guess, perceived victories over the first 100 days of Asha Sharma's and Matt Booty's leadership. They talked about shipping more updates in the first 100 days than in the prior year. They mentioned that Game Pass is showing growth after 8 months of decline, and they celebrated the what they felt was a great presentation at the Xbox Games Showcase and the FanFest event, not to be confused with the Final Fantasy XIV FanFest. I guess this is where gamers and members of the media could come and, you know, see some of this stuff down in Los Angeles in person. Of course, because it is a business memo, it's not all sunshine and roses. The rest of the memo talks about that the company needs to have optimism and realism as they move into the next 100 days. They talked about ending the current fiscal year. They anticipate with a 3% margin. They have $20 billion in outgoing investments, but their annual revenue has declined $500 million. They cited the hardware crisis with the cost of components, which, girl, yeah, I mean, that's bad. They also mentioned, which will have some relevance later in the episode, that the expansion of the studio system has left them overextended. They talked about that there are industry-defining franchises in their portfolio that are not being adequately funded. They mentioned also that the current platform infrastructure is too complex and too dependent on other vendors, and that they need to become self-reliant. So this actually puts a lot of perspective retrospective perspective on the Xbox Game Showcase, which we will get into later, which, spoiler alert, it was good, and it also was not good. So it was really interesting to be like, oh, okay. And then we will be bookending, we'll kind of be bookending the discussion with some Xbox and Sony in particular related news. You know, I get the feeling that, of course, it's been pretty rough over at Xbox for the past few years, but I just feel bad for the workers who are there like every day, who are actually having to get shit done. You know, the people who aren't in upper management, like they're probably going to be more overworked than ever if they even keep their jobs. Cause like, girl, I recognize the tone and structure of that memo from many a work email. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very euphemistic.
Huh? I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, it's let me say it like this. It really projects a different picture than what it's really trying to say.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people read this and are like, oh, they're really getting ready to like shift blame. They're really getting ready to like make us all get ready to eat a shit sandwich, you know?
Oh, no.
And I would really ask, the reason why we put this in front of the discussions of their showcases is because I would ask our listeners, you know, to really think fourth dimensionally with this one. I do think that how Microsoft has behaved since their showcase really does and should color what we saw from their showcase. That's
showcase?
Also why...
Showcase more like showing their ass.
All right. Well, and that's actually why we're going to rearrange our segments a little bit this week. One of the reasons why we do this show modularly, so that after the showcase, we can pick this thread back up. That having been said, I do want to move us over to the next news story because it is related. But it is a separate news story because, frankly, it is a whole ass talking point unto itself. We're basically getting word out of Asha Sharma as well that due to the crisis of the cost of components, we are going to see, in her perspective, a crisis in cost with regards to the next gen console gaming space. And then as a result, her quote is, we will start to see radically different business models. And then she also specifically says, we must think about other ways to think about the cost construction of the console. We must think about how we create different plans so more people can participate in the console. She went on and also said, we must think about partnerships that will allow us to have better distribution and reach, and we must think about the experiences that we're creating outside of that as well to reach new audiences. I think we've reached a point where it can be hard to imagine that mass audiences can afford thousands of dollars to spend on a console generation. And so I think we will start to see radically different business models that we never expected start to come into orbit later this year. And then we'll also link you to an interesting other perspective of some of these same quotes over at gamesindustry.biz.
Gamesindustry.biz.
And we will link you, of course, over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where we try to link all of the stories that we discuss here on air, as well as link you to the original reporting done by all of these incredible writers we could not do here with, if not for what they're all doing there. So we basically have this link from Games Industry, and they are basically connecting it to games streaming, and that they think that another big games streaming press is about to come up. I do think when paired with some of the things that Asha Sharma has said, that we can intuit that they're likely to pursue that as one of the pillars of their business in the future. I just, again, for all of the reasons we've noted before, a lot of specific game genres don't really work that well as streamable games. Yeah. So I really wonder if that's going to be as realistic of a solution as they think for many game genres.
I'm like, girl, are they trying to go all Amazon Luna up in here?
All right. And then wrapping up the Xbox trifecta of big stories, we also have word here, according to Xbox leadership, that Xbox Game Pass lost millions of subscribers after the 2025 price hike.
Yeah.
Right. I think that that's very interesting. This comes specifically from an interview that Chris Dring did with Matthew Ball, who is the Xbox's chief strategy officer.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Dring, of course, with the game business.
I'm so sorry. I have to interrupt you. I was not going to make this joke earlier, but you mean to tell me that Xbox has people in upper management named Ball and Booty? Are you fucking kidding me?
So, and they attributed the loss of subscribers to the Game Pass price increase.
Sure, Jan.
Exactly, right? I am very sure that the price increase was the major issue that lost them subscribers. I do. I don't have many illusions that most people care about politics in their entertainment, unfortunately. That having been said, I can think of at least one other major reason they lost subscribers in that exact same time frame, and it's funny that they didn't talk about it at all.
I don't know what you're talking about. Price hike is definitely why I stopped subscribing to Game Pass. It's not like there were other reasons behind that decision. Like, obviously, of course, definitely nothing to do with, you know, human rights or anything like that.
Yeah.
And speaking of human rights, in its own roundabout way, I need to set this one up. So here's the story from Pokemon Z to A. You want to get the news, you better listen carefully. Slam your body down and mind it all around. This is a Pokemon.
Chuck your body down, they'll spy it all around.
Ooh, well done. Very yes and. So this is a Pokemon Go story, and not one that you might expect, although I do feel like I did see a lot of people talking about this, both on social media as well as over on the Vogue Network Discord as well. There are a couple of levels to this story, just in case you have not been aware of this. So you might recall that just over a year ago, and I believe we talked about it on the show, that Niantic, the developer of Pokemon Go, sold all their licensed games to Scopely, which is an American mobile game developer that 2 years ago had been purchased by Savvy Games Group, which, if you're not familiar with that term or that group name, that is the video games division of the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, which we have definitely talked about on here. So there's all of that. And I believe we also talked about how when Scopely acquired Pokemon Go and all the other franchise games that Niantic had done, that Niantic spun off into another company called Niantic Spatial, which focused on geospatial, artificial intelligence, and spatial computing developments. And, of course, retaining the mobile games Ingress and Peridot. So we're talking about this company, Niantic Spatial, not Scopely, which that's a whole other thing. Apparently, they have entered into an agreement with a company. I'm just thinking about Pokemon. they entered into an agreement with a company that, long story short, wants to help improve GPS functionality in drones. And that company that they're partnering with has had a history of working with defense and intelligence industries in the past. So because of this, people who are playing Pokemon Go, or at least had been playing it for a long time and played it during the Niantic-owned era, are concerned that Pokemon Go data, like, you know, making their Pokestops and all of that, is being used to support helping geolocation for military drones, which that's some Pokopia-level apocalyptic type shit, if you ask me. Kotaku reached out to Niantic Spatial for a comment on this. Kotaku is the one who ran this article. We'll link at GameBuoy.org, of course.
GameBuoy.org.
They reiterated that Pokemon Go is owned by Scopely now. That the Pokemon Go data that people are concerned about was opt-in and is not being shared with the company they're partnering with. So I guess that's good, but can we really trust them? Because trusting corporations in 2026, LOL. This is just a cautious reminder that part of the reality of living in late-stage capitalism is that Big Brother is watching you, and your data is out there already. Like, it sucks, but that's the reality of it. So just consider who may have your data, whether it's to, you know, sell you things, to sell your data to someone else, or for more nefarious purposes, like geolocation for military drones when you just wanted a Dreepy. They should make a Dreepy drone, though.
There's a saying from the early days of the internet that basically, if you're not paying for the service, then you're likely the product to someone else. And it remains a pretty good starting point, but in the modern tech dystopia, even still, if you're not paying, or if you're paying for the service, you're probably still getting sold out. It's pretty, pretty bad.
Time to go to an island and really do pirate radio.
Oh, an island like Fortnite?
Oh, no, not that one. Not Slop Island.
Girl, it's a segue.
No, I'm surprised that Segway hasn't done a partnership with Fortnite. Is that company even around anymore? Didn't the Segway guy die on a Segway? Anyway, speaking of Segways, we are going to segue into this Fortnite news story. Girl, are you sure that this, I know you talked about that this episode is particularly modular with how we are arranging our segments. Are you sure this hasn't been so controversial? Because, like, girl, this last story is about how Epic Games put out a video showing how they use generative AI in their production pipeline. They talked about how they are using generative AI tools to create concept art and designs for new skins. And then they're using those to allegedly have their actual human artists draw them. They even had some screenshots in this IGN article that are like, artist hand painting in Photoshop. I'm like, girl, you know, some people may say, oh, good for Epic. They're being very transparent about how they're using AI, you know, being very open about it. So those people may say they're being transparent. I say that they're doubling down on AI slop and bragging about it. So I actually had, if any of you follow me over on Blue Sky, I had posted about this and just like, oh, I'm glad that I jumped off of the Fortnite train, although I should have said Battle Bus. I got an unsolicited reply, and I'm not trying to, like, call out and, like, dogpile, and I don't even know who this person was because I blocked them. But they called me out. They're saying, oh, well, calling Fortnite AI slop is a logical fallacy. You know, billions of people use AI, and it's the quality of content that determines whether it's slop. And then they went on to say that because I have an AI bias, that I was ignoring rationale and logic. I'm like, girl, LOL. You want to talk about AI bias, dog? Damn. So I've had about enough of these feces, but I believe you have one more thing to share before we go on to the releases.
Well, yeah, no, just that basically during this event that Fortnite was talking, they had announced that they were going to be having a Vampire Survivors Fortnite crossover. And then later during the talk, they did this whole generative AI piece. Basically, the Vampire Survivors guy was like, after seeing the presentation, like, hold up, wait a minute. And his exact words were, following today's news about Gen AI usage by Epic to create all sorts of game assets, including Fortnite characters, we're currently reviewing, in quotes, our collaboration with Fortnite. We'll let you know if anything moves forward.
Good for you, Ponkle.
Yeah, I just have to say, big snaps to Ponkle. I'm already a big fan of what they do over there, and this just makes me like them more. My understanding is, you know, Ponkle had some background in making, like, gambling games and wanted to, like, bring that kind of presentation style to, like, actual video games that require skill. And I just want to say, I'm so glad you came.
Oh my.
Okay, I meant like the song by The Wanted, Get Your Head Out of the Gutter.
Yeah, that doesn't change anything.
All right, let me get to these release updates then. This past week, Pokemon Champions finally released on iOS and Android devices. We have word that EverQuest Legends will be launching July 28th. Elden Ring Tarnished Edition is going to be releasing on Switch 2, as well as an update for other platforms on August 28th. My Hero Academia, All's Justice, will be coming to the Switch 2 platform on September 3/4, as far as Japan and worldwide releases go. The Legend of Heroes, Trails from Zero, and The Legend of Heroes, Trails to Azure, will be releasing on Nintendo Switch 2 and PlayStation 5 on September 10th. Shinobi Art of Vengeance will be coming to Switch 2 on September 24th. And Clive Barker's Hellraiser Revival will be launching October 8th. But that's not all. This week, we also have for you our usual slate of retro release updates. So for console archives in May, and I'm just going to sort of plow through these to keep things swift, we got the release of Gekkyo Shienryu, Toujin Makyoden Hercules no Eikyo, Master of Monsters, Disciples of Gaia. And the arcade archives releases for May were Ace Driver, which is of special note to me because it's another one of those Namco Deluxe cabinets, as well as Tag Team Wrestling and Mr. Do. And then for this month, for the arcade archives, on the 4th, we got... Oh, my notes are backwards here. On the 4th, we got Camel Tree. This was a arcade release from Taito in 1990. On the 11th, we got Rack 'em Up, which was a pool game coming out of Konami in 87. And this past week, on the 18th, we got Space Cyclone, which is a space shooty game from Taito in 1980. Out of console archives, on the 4th, we got Firework Thrower Kantaro's 53 Stations of the Tokaido on the NES.
Oh, that is a mouthful.
Yes, it is. That is a Sunsoft release from 1986. On the 11th, we got Le Empereur. This is a Koei game from 1991 for the NES as well. And then on the 18th, this past week, we got Legend of Kage. This is, of course, a classic Taito release from 86 in Japan and 87 in North America. That was, of course, a lot of retro releases since our last episode. I have played a few of them and had a good time with all of them. I remain really excited about the proliferation of regular retro releases that have been occurring of late. All of this having been done and all of this having been said, Slaggy, would you like to take us to a club?
Well, this club is kind of a buzzkill because it's supposed to be like delightful culture pieces. Are we sure this is not doom and gloom? Well, so this was an interesting one. This is a story over on Aftermath, who we love, of course, about how Ubisoft has embargoed journalists. Oh, it must have been about like Rayman Legends, right? Or maybe a yet-to-be-announced Assassin's Creed game, something like that. Nah, it was about layoffs. So what happened
I just want to note here that technically speaking, we will talk a little more about this news story when we get to Doom and Gloom. But I think we really needed to talk about the games culture piece of this embargo. Yes. Because it's wild to me.
Yes, this was a lot. So Insider Gaming originally broke the news that Ubisoft, I guess I'm turning into Sean Connery, Ubisoft shut down their studios in Winnipeg and Belgrade and cut jobs at their Barcelona studio a total of 380 jobs were lost. Some of the affected employees posted about this as well over on LinkedIn. However, other publications were subject to an embargo. The news came directly from Ubisoft and was given to these journalistic outlets. Ubisoft's claim is that, it's because the employees in Belgrade were still being notified of their layoffs. But, like, this is not normal, folks. Like, you just, you know, it might be like, okay, yeah, sure. But if you consider the fact that we are living in a time where corporations are controlling the narrative in the current media landscape, also politicians as well, it's a very slippery slope. We're at a point where trust in mainstream news is eroding rapidly, right? So, it's just for Ubisoft to be like, oh no, we're controlling the narrative here. Like, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Obviously, and I'm sure we will mention this again, when we talk a little more in depth about this, we hope that those affected by the layoffs find gainful employment where they are valued for their work rather than being treated as a commodity. Well, I hope you have something more cheerful for us, because this is kind of a bummer summer so far.
Yeah. Before I move on to the next news story, I just kind of want to note, you know, this is in part one of the myriad reasons why we actually brought the show back. Increasingly, there has been a tighter iron-fisted grip on the various sources of news everywhere, coming from above in basically every direction. And it has become, in my opinion, increasingly more important for us to talk to each other, to share our opinions and our views. When we know things, you know, and have information to share those, that information, to share the things we know, because frankly, good data is just not getting out there freely right now. So I think anything we can do to try and help contribute to good data getting out there freely is something that is worth doing. And I am preaching to y'all for a reason, because again, every day the grip gets a little tighter, so to speak. That having been said, and keeping our gaze firmly forward, I'm happy to report.
Gaze forward? Oh, hey.
I'm happy to report that per Box Office Mojo, the Super Mario Galaxy movie has become the first 2026 film to earn $1 billion U.S. dollars worldwide.
$1 billion.
Right. That has become sort of like the big movie milestone for these like big blockbuster pictures. So it is exciting to see the Mario Galaxy movie top it. I'm actually in a better mood about this news story today than I would have been if we had recorded at any other time. It's kind of yet another way that retrospective perspective has sort of helped this episode be all that it can be. I only saw the Mario Galaxy movie last night, but I liked it a lot more than I liked the Super Mario Brothers movie. That is to say, and I think I've talked about this in the past, I mostly didn't like the Super Mario Brothers movie very much. I think it's cute. I think it's fine. It's like the very definition of like a background movie. Because when I actually sit down and watch it, it's like, wow, this doesn't have a very strong through line at all. It's just like a series of vague Mario advertisements for images and themes that they want you to buy. And in that regard, the Super Mario Galaxy movie, I felt, actually did have kind of a narrative. And so I was really appreciative of that fact. Had a really good time with, you know, all of the various like Smash Brothers references, of which I felt like there was a lot. I felt like practically every other scene had a freeze frame on someone at a moment of physical impact against somebody. Mr. Game & Watch, I had a great time.
Star Fox.
Yeah, right? One of the highlights of the movie.
Yeah. I think we'll definitely be talking about both those movies after we... Because next year we already have the Zelda movie is finally going to be here. Feels like it's... been forever, but I guess it wasn't that long ago that was announced.
Yeah, we also have Sonic. Time to do another it might be time to do another movie episode and talk about sort of the new generation crop of video game movies.
Absolutely, because I think Sonic 4 is also another spring 27 release, and I love those Sonic movies a lot.
Yeah, we just had the Mortal Kombat movie sequel, and I liked the first Mortal Kombat movie from this reboot era a fair bit, so hopefully the sequel is good.
Yeah, it's kind of video game movie mania.
Yeah, in fact, now I'm even thinking about it, like we just had like a more recent Silent Hill movie that we haven't seen and talked about yet. So yeah,
Street Fighter coming out with Orville Peck. It's probably going to be terrible, but I'm going to watch it for him.
Yeah.
Love you, Orville.
All right. Well, we also have word here, and this is a little bit of a prickly hot button issue for me at this exact moment. But we have word that the local baseball team, the San Francisco Giants, are going to be hosting a Pokemon Worlds night on the eve of this year's Pokemon World Championships. This is going to be happening on August 27th. The special jersey design is pretty freaking cute, if I'm being really honest. The problem is we're having a little bit of a local controversy here because, as noted, the Giants are our local team. And during our recent Pride Night, multiple players showed their ass. Not in a literal way, although at this point I wouldn't want to see it. But yeah, instead,
if some of them had, I'd be like, oh, hey,
instead of choosing not to wear the pride hats, which was an option they could have taken. And some players did, they chose to deface their pride hats. And, because it was with like Bible stuff, it's supposed to be forgiven, but I just don't think that's appropriate.
I mean, it was like biblical verses that are interpreted by some to, demean homosexuality, right? I'm not a Bible
in a literal girl. In a literal sense, it's about like reclaiming the rainbow type stuff. But it's, to me, that's not even the point, though. The point is that if you don't want to wear the hat or you have a protest, the method you follow that through is by not wearing the hat, not defacing it, which is never okay in the major leagues. They have stringent uniform rules.
This makes me want to reclaim the rainbow and dress like an Ho-Oh. Like cosplay to go to this Pokemon World tonight.
Right. And then, the pitchers who did that, and I won't go too far afield because we're not a sports podcast, but I'm mad about it. I have to vent my feelings.
Sports buoy.sports.
A Dodgers player who last year did the same thing and didn't get penalized for it. But it's like, first off, he was one of the hottest pitchers in the league and y'all aren't. And I'm sorry, but there is an unfair meritocracy element in major league sports of all kinds. Like, I thought we all knew that. But also, he should have been punished for that because he did deface his hat a year ago. Anyway, all of this having been said, we have the Giants hosting a Pokemon Worlds night in August on the 27th. I still kind of want to go, even though right now I'm in kind of a Giants boycott phase. I will probably not go, but holy moly, that jersey's cute. Slaggy, so any cute thoughts?
I'm a little concerned because apparently at Oracle Park, which is the local bar park. Jesus, I can't talk today. It notes in this Anime News Network article that they are hosting a special Pokemon drone show. Excuse me, Niantic. You said our Pokemon data was not being used for drones.
That's so funny. That's not quite what that means, but that's a really funny way to say that.
I really hope that this Psyduck drone arrangement is actually part of it because, like, that's adorable that they chose Psyduck as a representation.
Absolutely. All right, to keep this show moving forward, we have some news here out of Ponkle. This is word of the new Legacy of the Blood Moon DLC. This was announced shortly before the Summer Games Fest presentations, and then it did show up at least one of them, as I recall. This is paired with the announcement that a Switch 2 version is also currently in production, and as well as that, Ponkle announced that Survivaton is the name of Ponkle's lineup of Survivors projects. And to that end, Vampire Survivors has now been renamed First Survivaton. It's funny because it's pronounced Survivaton and it is short for Survive a Ton. So I think it's really pretty cute and works also as a genre label. When they made this announcement, I didn't understand why this was relevant. And then at one of the shows, a licensed Survivaton was announced. And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. So if you don't understand why we're talking about Survivatons, stay tuned.
I just love that they're like, Survivaton is short for Survivaton.
Yeah, right. That got me, honestly.
That's some Game Buoy level LOLs.
Honestly, Ponkle seems like our kind of people.
And you know who else might be our kind of people are the folks over at CD Projekt Red. I know that they have not had the rosiest history, a rosy Projekt Red history, but I appreciated the fact that the CEO, Michael Nowakowski, had, I guess, a little bit more nuanced thoughts about generative AI in gaming. He was speaking to a newsletter called Edge's Knowledge, which I don't believe is related to the Final Fantasy character. He's talked about that he has talked with studios that are developing entirely generative AI games, AI-generated games. He said, I was in a conversation with a person who started a studio and telling me, I'm running a primarily AI-based studio. I can have 40 prototypes within a week. 2 weeks from now, I can have five games that I can, that I chose. 2 weeks from now, I can have five games that I chose are going to be the best. 3 weeks from now, I'm actually launching a game. Maybe that's going to be successful. I have some doubts whether this really is the path to follow. So, like, I don't know if I'm giving CD Projekt Red too much credit. And I'm sorry, this is actually the joint CEO. The GamesRadar article says, oh, joint The Witcher and joint The Witcher and CD Projekt Red CEO. That's a little bit awkward wording, but yeah, I appreciate that having skepticism about AI. Like,
yeah,
anytime I hear accepting it or being proud of it, right?
Yeah, anytime I hear any of these guys saying, I'm not really sure this is the way, I'm like, okay, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I also just kind of wanted to note that this quote that he had given was to the Edge Knowledge newsletter, which is a free weekly publication by Future PLC and the creators of Edge Magazine.
Oh, the Edge Knowledge, not the Edge Knowledge.
Precisely.
But also... also, Edge, we love Edge.
That is exactly why I wanted to make sure to draw that line. All right, then.
I'm gonna make a newsletter about Edward Geraldine.
Ah! All right. Well, then let's wrap this segment up by talking about one last kind of interesting cultural piece. I don't think this is going to go anywhere, but this article that titles the story is Gamers Sue Sony for Allegedly Breaking California Digital Purchase Law. And basically, this is because they allege that the digital storefront for the PlayStation, by using language like buy now and confirm purchase, sort of obfuscates the fact that people are buying licenses rather than actually owning the software that they're buying. I will say, again, I come from a legal background, speaking, you know, what people think of as legalese or whatever is like a thing that is built into my brain. I'm not really sure that I think that these folks have an argument because, as noted in this article on Aftermath, which we will link you to over at GameBuoy.org. The current purchase screen actually does have a disclosure that says, you know, by confirming purchase, you agree to the terms of service and you further acknowledge your purchase is, you know, just a license. The four gamers who are filing this suit say that, you know, a reasonable customer would not necessarily read this notice or whatever. I just don't really know that I think that's going to fly. It's one of those things where as a consumer and as a gamer, I really want this to work. Even if it were just like better communication about some of these things for the people who don't understand this fact, because clearly there are people who don't understand this. But that having been said, I presently don't feel like I'm being ripped off by digital purchases over this facet. And so I don't really want to be like, oh, I hope they F Sony in the A. Like, I don't know that in this particular thing, I think Sony is doing anything wrong. That having been said, typically fuck corporations. So it's a toss up. Psyche, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, actually what I was going to say is that, like, I think you pretty much summarized it really well. I would like for these people to be victorious, but I don't know if they will.
Yeah.
There's really a case here.
Yeah. Well, that's it for what's going on in California, but there are other states, Idaho among them. I suppose we should go to Idaho.
I guess that's a place.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Yeah, so this is finally a delightful story. Thank you. I was starting to get a little worried about this episode for a minute. This is from Red Octane Games. Our article comes from Gematsu. We love what happens over there by, you know, that's a one-man show over there at Gematsu.
Sal Romano, right?
Yeah, yeah. Keep up the great work, Sal. This is about Stage Tour, which is the upcoming Plastic Instruments game. Red Octane Games has released new information, screenshots, and footage for Stage Tour. This is the developer spotlight trailer. It featured a look at the game's unique spin on a campaign mode. They're describing it as almost roguelite in nature. Each campaign run will have different set lists, challenges, gameplay modifiers, and branching paths. That's kind of cool. There were 7 songs in the closed alpha. This is also playable at IGN Live, which was occurring down in the Summer Games Fest festivities. And this consisted of Ratatata by Baby Metal and Electric Callboy. One of our gaming friends would probably be very into that song. That's very like a cross-section of his interests. Get the Funk Out by Extreme. Square Hammer by Ghost.
Are you on the square? Are you on the level?
Ooh, you almost had some Orville Peck, a little bit of Orville going on there. Get it, girl. Mimi's Delivery Service.
Just noting that you said like one of our friends will be excited about Ghost, but I'm like, girl, I have like 4 Ghost t-shirts and like 3 of their records framed on my walls. Like, I'm a major Ghost stan also.
For sure. Mimi's Delivery Service by Good Kid, not to be confused with Kiki's Delivery Service. Danny California by Red Hot Chili Peppers, seems predictable. Terminator Oscillator by Static X, and Island in the Sun by Weezer. I think that's a pretty good variety to kind of showcase just a little taste of the set list. What do you think?
Yeah, honestly, I'm so hype. Just the fact that they announced a Ghost song already has me super excited. I'm really bummed by the fact that a Ghost song got added to Fortnite Festival right after I stopped playing due to the slop.
Which one was it?
Mariana Cross.
Oh, okay.
Which makes sense. Yeah, it was huge on TikTok a couple years ago, so it definitely makes sense that they would go for that.
That's kind of the way they do that, yeah.
Yeah, that does tend to be how the Fortnite songs get picked anymore. That's another reason why I'm really excited about Square Hammer being picked, is because that's a song that I think is going to be great off of this or in a game like this. I was thinking, and I would also love any song off of the record Impera. So just really overall very excited. I think that this is a good selection of songs. I don't necessarily love Red Hot Chili Peppers, but I think it's a good sign that they're here. Same with that particular Weezer song. Just overall, super hype that this game exists. It is exactly what I want. I am praying that they don't make some kind of stupid AI slop mistake and that they just land the plane, because I am so hyped for this one.
Absolutely.
We also have word that available earlier this month became a demo for Switch and Switch 2 for Digimon Story Time Stranger. And so the really exciting thing about this demo is that the save data carries over to the full release. So if you, like me or my husband, are excited for the release of this one, you can get started on your adventure now.
Excellent. I've been hearing from a lot of people, including you and your husband, that I should be in particular checking out Digimon Story Time Stranger, not to mention just some of the more recent Digimon Story games. So excellent.
Indeed. All right. We also have word here of a new Code Geass game. This is a survivor action game for mobile phones. This is to celebrate, in part, the 20th anniversary of the Code Geass franchise. This is Code Geass Nightmare Survivor. I am excited in the sense that I like Survivor games and I like Code Geass, but phone game, so we'll see how that turns out.
Well, I mean, it's a Survivor 10, so you kind of owe it to yourself to check it out, right?
All right. Let's see, we also have word here that Demon School is getting a Switch 2 port alongside new paid DLC. The new DLC is going to add more of the game's trademark puzzle battles. My recollection when most people were playing the game originally was that the puzzle battles were already a high point of the game, so it is delightful to see them doubling down.
Nice.
And we also had word here, and this is a really cute one. Destiny 2, as we've noted, is planning to shut down. This is a, and I mean, I say planning to shut down, I should say planning to shut down the production of new content.
Going into maintenance mode, basically.
Precisely. So the big final update was going live about a week and a half ago. I think this was on June 9th. And the fan base ended up crashing the servers within the first 30 minutes of the update going live. This was in part intentional, as the player base was telling everyone basically like, hey, if you love Destiny, please log in. We want their, you know, day one numbers to be as high as possible to show Sony and Bungie that people still want this franchise, that this shouldn't be left behind. So the fact that they did in fact bring the servers down was actually in this specific context treated as a victory. Although obviously it is worth noting at this time that we do not have any indication that this has actually moved the needle in any regard. It is still nonetheless really optimistic and hopeful in my eyes to see communities banding together in order to make a point like that. Because I think that this was a really constructive way for the community to make the point that they do still exist and would still come back to Destiny if Destiny was, you know, had an update that included all of the content we all liked and wished were there and also felt like it was respectful of our time.
Yeah.
Like, I think
it's just really sad.
I think those are the major concerns at the moment. Yeah, right. It is. It is really sad. It feels like they're squandering so much opportunity for, frankly, probably so Sony can chase AI somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this on Game Buoy before in the olden days. Like, Destiny 2, I have great love for.
Yeah, so. I really do, too. It was a major bummer when it felt like they basically took away content that we had all bought already. Like, that definitely felt very bad. But
that's what killed it for me, too.
Yeah. I still think there's a path for Destiny out there. And I don't understand. Obviously, it's larger than I have access to. But it just feels like, despite so many obvious paths to reconciliation and a better future for that game, they've just gone the exact opposite way time and again, and I don't really get it. Anyway, I think I think you have a better one for us.
Yeah. So, oh no, is this still a little controversial? Ad Hoc Studios had HR violations. Oh no, wait. That's just the name of an update that they're releasing for Dispatch. So, in all seriousness, you might remember when we talked about the censorship kerfuffle with Dispatch when it was released on Switch and Switch 2, specifically that there were obtrusive black bars censoring censorable stuff. So, as part of the recently released HR violations update, there are now some other censorship options. In the words of Ad Hoc, butts, boobs, and birds have been set free, which means gluteus maximus, gluteus maximi. Is that what you would say for the plural blood?
I guess so.
Breasts and middle fingers. So butts, boobs, and birds. I just love the way that they phrased it. There are some new censorship options, such as a mosaic blur and then a chaotic mode, which adds like booty shorts and stuff. Just takes it really over the top. Like, you know, I think, you know, as far as like having to censor games, like having a little fun with it this way is the best way around it. But I mean, the thing that's weird is that, like, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 is on Switch 2 with, like, you can full out have your penis in boobs, butts, and birds and everything out.
Yeah, I still really don't understand the guidelines or whatever that led to this, because like you note, we've seen other games go further than Dispatch goes and with far more realistic likenesses. So I really don't understand how this censorship kerfuffle happened in the first place, even though I do really like this way of addressing it now that they've had time to respond.
Yeah.
All right, well then, we also have word here that the final update to Assassin's Creed Shadows will be releasing on June 6th. Oh, has released on June 16th. Time is a funny thing.
Oh, yeah.
That added a new story quest as well as new endgame features. I haven't played this yet, obviously, but as I liked Assassin's Creed Shadows a fair bit, I think it is likely that I will go back and check this out. Asagi, did you ever play Shadows?
I have not yet. I literally own a copy, and it was one of those, it's available for a good price. I will go ahead and pick it up, and just sitting in my backlog.
Ah, all right. You should get to that. It's a pretty good one. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, then the last one here I wanted to highlight is word here. This was published per a interview with Famitsu, which was translated by Genki and is being reported on by Games Radar, which we will link you to at over at GameBuoy.org.
Link you to over on GameBuoy.org.
I was hoping you'd do the whole chain.
I'm like the way that I'm stumbling over my words lately, like that would have just not happened.
Basically, Tetsuya Nomura gave an interview in light of the announcements that came out over the Summer Games Fest period. And something that Nomura said I really wanted to talk about. The quote is, "Kingdom Hearts has become my life's work, so I can't leave it out. I never imagined it would become such a long journey. At the beginning of the project, I made numerous trips to Disney headquarters for meetings, and many of the things we discussed back then have come to fruition over time. It truly has become a land of dreams and magic."
Aww.
Right? I thought that that was really wonderful. I think this is a really fascinating sort of counterpiece to some of the discussion that Nomura was giving about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, where he was talking about starting to think about his own retirement and as such plotting Kingdom Hearts in the direction of a conclusion. And so thinking about it in this context of it as his sort of life's work is, I think, a really fascinating perspective. I think it's also interesting, the life's work angle, when you consider the seeming repurposing of other ideas from other games that he has done continually with Kingdom Hearts, probably notably all of the Versus 13 stuff that has been added and continues to get added to the series as it goes on.
Some people get so mad about that. I'm like, why?
Right? Or I saw a thread on Era where people were talking about Quadratum as like the revival of Versus 13, and people are getting straight angry, even though, I mean, at this point we have literal Versus 13 trailers that have been remade in Kingdom Hearts in the released version. So like the connections are no longer a crazy theory that some of us have. Like it's very much in the text.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Why are you playing Kingdom Hearts if you're not all about the metatextual references and morality and the, you know, it's not that complicated. It's not really not that complicated of a narrative. Right. Anyways, I think we're inevitably going to be having a Kingdom Hearts like multi-part episode series. It's inevitable. It's going to be our life's work. It's going to be our life's work.
I'm thinking right now, and we'll see how we go. I'm thinking that maybe in the lead up to Kingdom Hearts 4's release, we do a series of like the Road to Quadratum, and we'll talk about sort of the different phases of the game and go from there.
Absolutely. That is exactly what I was thinking.
All right. Well, then all of this having been done, all of this having been said, I'd like to move us on to our discussion for the week. This is the Summer Game Fest 2026 Side A discussion. Again, I want to note our talking point pillars here today are, of course, the Sony State of Play that happened on June 2nd, the Summer Game Fest main show that happened on June 4th, the Microsoft Game Studios Showcase and E-Day Direct on June 6th, and last but certainly not least in this set, the Nintendo Direct that occurred on June 9th. I am going to start things off because of how much content there was here. We're not going to do our usual thing of going one by one over every announcement that was made. We will link you, right? We couldn't. This would be an 8-hour episode.
This would be an 80-hour episode.
All right, with how we talk. We will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
We will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
To some good Reliance articles and forum posts that cite all of the announcements that were made at these events, in case you do want to play along at home, see everything that was announced. You know, just kind of the normal stuff we do over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Excellent. All right. So with that established, I'm going to start here by talking about my highlights. We're going to start with the Sony State of Play. This was, again, from June 2nd. For me, the top highlight was actually probably the last game of the show that they showed. They ended up showing, I think, about 20 minutes of God of War La Fae. This is a spinoff of God of War involving Kratos' wife, whom passes on at the beginning of the Dad of War reboot era games. His odyssey is sort of begins with her passing. And so, you know, they light her body on a pyre and what have you. This game sort of picks up with her spirit from the time of that pyre. This caught my attention in a big way. I really liked the original God of War games a lot from a gameplay perspective. So the Dad of War reboot era has broadly left me a little bit cold. Like, I understand it's supposed to be more like in your face and visceral or whatever, but it's just for me a little less exciting. This game appears to return to that older classic over the top sensibility. It also has like a real edge of like the absurd and fantastic. In the lengthy 20-minute demo, they showed, for example, that I guess one of the like player companions that you meet up with is a talking gelatinous cube with a sword in it. You end up like claiming the sword and you gain, you know, cool over-the-top action game powers from it. But the gelatinous cube companion was just such a delight for me. Overall, this one, it really pressed my buttons in the positive connotation, and I'm really excited for it, despite the fact that I saw a lot of, you know, ooh, who is this game for? Like, for me, it's for the ladies, gays, and theys, and we fucking won, okay?
Yes.
Anyone else who's willing to play a game that has multiple colors in it, please come through, have fun with us. But if you're a hater bitch, just go away.
Multiple colors.
Right? Like, if that's it's the vibrant. Problem, right?
It's vibrant.
It's vibrant. That must be gay. Like, come on. Like, you just want all of your games to be gray, slate gray, and shit brown. That's on you, girl.
I'm like, girl, thank you. My HDR on my TV can finally take advantage of some vibrance. When you say it's pressing your buttons, are they triangle, circle, square, and X?
I guess so. In this case, it's pressing my buttons and making me, I don't know, tear a Cyclops' eye out or whatever.
Amazing. Like, yeah, I didn't have as much God of War experience as you did. I played a little bit of the original games. Like, I definitely remember them being a bit bombastic, you know, problematic in some parts as well, looking back on them. It did seem like just the presentation of the Dad of War games, I did not play them. They seemed very, like, why so serious? So, yeah, I think, like, you said it really well. I love a gelatinous cube in my fantasy media and maybe even in my bedroom. Hey,
we are a show by and for monster lovers.
Right. So, you know, the one thing I do want to circle back to is LMAO to all the haters who are like just big mad over a God of War game having a female protagonist. Like, all I can say to that is pinching emoji. This also makes me kind of excited about how they will handle the upcoming trilogy remakes, the original trilogy sounds like a original Philly.
No, sake. Man, I love the original trilly.
Anyways, what else stood out or good or bad for you from State of Play?
I was really happy to see some sequels to games I really liked. Obviously, I don't want every game ever to be a sequel, but in this case, you know, we saw Until Dawn 2 and Control Resonant. Those are both direct follow-ups that were big deals for me during this showcase, and at different times, I didn't really think were going to happen. You know, we have had some rumors about Until Dawn 2 over the last year or two, so it wasn't a complete shock, but I was still quite delighted. Control Resonant had already been announced, but again, both games that at the time of their original versions releases, I didn't think we were getting more games in either of these series. So to see both flourish and proliferate has me delighted. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I, as far as Until Dawn 2, I don't think that franchise is really for me. I am very much a scaredy cat. I've talked about that on this show. Control, on the other hand, is probably a franchise I should look into because of not only your high accolades for it, as well as, you know, what many others have said. So I think they both look great, but probably only Control for me personally. It made me interested in like, oh, yeah, I probably should go check this out.
What you would probably enjoy, and this would be true for Until Dawn 2 as well, but what would be really fun is to have you come over one night and like hang out and play. We will play Until Dawn 1 as a group and like, oh, we'll have some popcorn and like camp out under blankets or whatever and like have like a almost like slumber party vibes. Like that's the Until
Girl,
Dawn.
I thought you said we were going to have some poppers. I'm like, what type of game is this?
Ah, no popcorn. Like watching a scary movie with popcorn.
I heard you say pop and I was like, ooh, girl, this is Pride Month, but hey, want to do poppers and play Until Dawn? Want to do poppers Until Dawn and play Until Dawn? Hey.
All right. So
if that is your thing, live your best life. Do your big one.
I think the last thing that I was really excited for during Sony's event then was the announcement of Doom's team in the upcoming Marvel Tokon. I was first really excited because I'm really excited for Marvel Tokon in general. But I'm particularly excited because the team of Magneto, Green Goblin, and Carnage is just really exciting for me as a fighting game lineup. In particular, I'm a big fan of the symbiote corner of the Marvel Universe, so I'm really hype AF about Carnage being included as a full proper character with his own unique moveset rather than just like a recolor of Venom in, you know, MVC1 or whatever. Like, this is so exciting and so cool. I'm really hype. Slaggy, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it looks like Marvel Tokon is really shaping up nicely. I definitely expect I will be checking it out, as I've mentioned before. You know, I enjoy Marvel Rivals a lot, but I honestly can get a little overwhelmed and overstimulated if I play it too much. So, like, this might be a bit more of a digestible Marvel experience for me. I think things like Street Fighter VI have really done well in allowing, like, gamers like me who maybe had not, you know, grown up in the fighting games community and used to, you know, that level of precision and all of that. So I think that this would be a good, this will be a good one.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Then I guess we should move over to our honorable mentions. I guess I'll note that to the degree that Tokon, if you dip into it, I would be happy to just play and try to help you figure out mechanics if it's helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so for the honorable mentions then, I wanted to bring up Rayman Legends Retold. Rayman Legends Retold looks good. It looks great, even. It's just, it kind of confounds me because it's kind of like a beautiful remake of a game that has aged quite well and is still already quite beautiful. So it's kind of seems unnecessary, like straight up. As a result, even though I could use a Rayman Legends replay because it's been like a decade, I think I'm likely to skip this until a sale. The thing is, this already had that like really beautiful, like pretty high resolution for like the Wii U era 2D style that now it's all been redone up in 3D, and it's like, okay, it still looks good. It still looks beautiful, but like, I don't even know that I think it looks better than the old style. It just looks differently quite nice. So for me, this will be probably a wait for a sale, but I do think it's really awesome for folks that haven't played it before, and that's kind of why I wanted to highlight it.
Yeah, you know, I have not actually played it before. I kind of missed out on it. I actually don't remember if I've ever actually played a Rayman before. You know, it's one of those gaps in my gaming experiences. Like, it's one of those franchises where people are like, oh, what? You haven't played XYZ? And Rayman is one of those. This announcement made me think of our friend Extifer, formerly of Horde House fame. You know, he's a big fan of Rayman Legends. But I kind of, when I had been looking at the feedback of all of the Summer Game Fest stuff, I actually saw Extifer post about, like, it looks great, but it doesn't need to be remade, but it looks great. So,
well, like, yeah, even the someone who's is,
like, a huge fan to be like, yeah.
Yeah, back at the time, it got PS4 and Xbox One ports back in, like, 2014. So it's already really easy to play in you know, good high resolution because of how backwards compatibility in the current gen works.
Yeah.
That having been said, though, I did also think of Extifer because he was big on Rayman Legends. And I do hope it turns out great. And I hope that folks who haven't played it before have a blast with it. And then I hope Extifer and us also have a blast with it when it is someday on sale.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's see. I also wanted to mention as one of my honorable mentions, and this would absolutely be a top pick for me. It's just that we didn't necessarily get to see a whole lot of the game itself. It still seems like it's a long way out. I'm expecting we will still see it in a similar slot at Sony's show next year, you know? But this was Kemuri. This is the new game by Ikumi Nakamura. She did a Ghostwire Tokyo, I think it was called. And I had a real blast with that one, both from a gameplay perspective as well as its aesthetics, which is why this game both looks like a fit for me gameplay-wise and is very much to my aesthetic tastes. Very interested in seeing more of this, and it's one I'll definitely have my eyes peeled for. Well, what about you?
Oh, yeah. That one was very vibes.com.png for sure. I would like to see more. You know, another one that I thought had another interesting aesthetic and vibe. Like, I have not played Dave the Diver, but Boncho the Chef looked really fun. You know, I haven't really played any cooking games ever, which I kind of forget that that's a genre, but I like the aesthetic of it a lot. So might be worth checking out.
Yeah. Dave the Diver is really cute. And it kind of does a little more than some of the other cooking games in a positive way. I don't want to say too much, but I think you should check it out. I think you'd be delighted.
Lovely.
Let's see then. We have space for a third mention, but I don't think either of us used it for this particular showcase. So I'm going to move us over to our disappointments and or other thoughts. I'm going to start us off here. One of the big focuses, I dare say the first big focus of the show, was Marvel's Wolverine. I'm weirdly iffy on this. I'm obviously a huge Marvel fan. I'm the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe is probably my very favorite. I'm like, this should be my whole fucking gag. But unfortunately, even though I do enjoy hyper-violence in media when it's utilized with a certain sense of intention, the gameplay trailer they showed looked even more over the top blood-wise than Mortal Kombat. And it's like, this is crazy. I've heard that there is going to be like a blood slider of some kind. And so I'm hoping that we can really tone down the gore. I know everyone always says like, oh man, if Wolverine could really use those claws, but for, you know, Marvel editorial, every fight would be a bloodbath. And it's like, okay, my guys, Wolverine is a hero because he doesn't use his claws to murder everybody, despite the fact that he was literally created to be a weapon. How do you guys completely miss the point here? And that isn't
That's just why X-Force is the GOAT.
Ah, right. And that isn't to say the people making this game are missing the point. I understand they're doing a specific story about a specific time in this specific take on Logan's life. And I'm willing to hear them out. I, as a consumer, as a viewer, as a player, however you want to categorize me in this context, I don't like that level of over-the-top blood. It was a little too much, and so I just really hope I have some level of control over that.
Yeah, I know. I definitely agree. I enjoy Wolverine as a character a lot. But it does seem right now, from what we've seen, that it's bloody for bloody's sake. And so if there really is a bloodiness slider, I think that would be great. It would be funny if they were, not that they would release it on Switch 2 because, you know, oh, everyone's doing exclusives now, but if Nintendo had a version without blood, Mortal Kombat style.
That's yeah, so
people
funny.
People just seem to really pigeonhole Wolverine. And I am not the most well-versed Marvel/X-Men person, but, you know, I've watched and read enough that I feel like I know that there's more to Logan than just blood and violence.
Yes, and thank you. And I think that's the thing, is that in the context of this presentation, it really made the game feel like Logan was delighting in turning his enemies into little blood hurricanes. And it just, I'll wait to see what they do with the overall story. But the trailer for me was a turnoff, or the gameplay demo was a turnoff, and I wasn't expecting that. Let's see, the other big disappointment for me, and this is another one where I think I only really had two big disappointments. It makes sense in retrospect, but at the time, I was very disappointed by the fact that we had like no Square Enix in this whole presentation. Going a summer game event, not even a summer game fest necessarily, just like all the years of E3, all the years of, you know, not E3, going a Sony event without Square Enix just felt bad. Again, made more sense in retrospect, but at the time, that was a major bummer for me. What did you think?
Yeah, I think that they were obviously saving the goods for other showcases, but I thought we would see something. For me, one of the biggest disappointments was that Crystal Dynamics is remaking the original Tomb Raider game again. Like, I'm not against remakes. Like, we literally talked about the, you know, Rayman Legends one, but, like, at this point, Crystal Dynamics making Tomb Raider games over and over again is like a hard drive headline, you know, like at The Onion for games. And then you have the whole awkward Q&A about how AI was used, and they were like,
yeah,
but
yeah,
it was too late. Yep, oops.
Yeah, and you know, it's like they are literally making two Tomb Raider games at the same time. It's like, maybe you guys didn't need to make this remake of the original. And I understand.
Oh, but we got to tie it into the new franchise or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's supposed to be like a remake of the original game that sort of ties that version of Lara together to like the remake version of Lara. But it's like, you guys made Tomb Raider Anniversary. It was one of like the games that your studio cut their teeth making Tomb Raider games on. And it is already a perfect remake and reimagining of the original Tomb Raider. You don't have to do this game you're doing right now. What you're describing could be like a prologue or a freaking DLC connective tissue cutscene that suggests Tomb Raider Anniversary happens. That's all that needed to happen. Like, what is... I just... No, I'm with you, girl. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Then let's give our final thoughts and our letter grade. It's kind of funny here because... given how we just ended on our disappointments, it ends up sounding like we didn't have a good time with this show, but I actually thought it was a very solid show. It was a solid B, maybe a B+. Lots of stuff I will end up getting, very little that I saw that was outright offensive. Overall, a good time. And, you know, within the context of the presentation, I was happy with the presentation. I do have other thoughts that we'll get to in a segment after our discussion, which is a little different from how we normally do things, but extreme times call for extreme measures. So what did you think, Slaggy?
No, I'm exactly on the same page. I too have concerns about Sony in the long term, but I had to look objectively at what was presented. It was a decent showing, so I would say solid B to B+. Probably just go with a B because, you know, if I'm on the fence, grade a little lower.
That makes sense. All right. Well, then I would like to move on from here and go to the Summer Game Fest main show. This was on June 4th, 2026. And I believe you had something you had wanted to say about this one first.
Yeah. Yeah. We were both present at the Vogue Network's Twitch stream that was co-streaming, live streaming the showcase, the flagship showcase here. This was by Bobby Blackwolf and the return of Rob Roberts to video game streaming real talk content. So it was a delight. So many of our lovely and beautiful listeners were there. You were there too. I joke, but it, something I really enjoyed is I feel like I was really happy to see a lot of our lovely and beautiful listener react to things similarly. I'm like, oh, well, that's why they're Game Buoy listeners, because, you know, and it's okay if they have different opinions, obviously, but I was like, yeah, that tracks. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I did. I saw a lot more support for Microsoft stuff in that chat than, you know, I necessarily would have been into myself, but that's okay.
True, true.
Yeah, no, because truly, people are allowed to have different opinions and different, you know, lines and, you know, different veils. And, you know, where we all draw the line, in my opinion, should be outright hate. That is where I don't fucks with people no more. So as long as they're just disagreements on whether we should be supporting Microsoft or not, we're all good.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So with all that having been done.
Inside, they didn't really have a lot that they talked about. Let's just skip this one. Yeah.
So it's so funny because my husband and I, we were actually talking before this event about how, you know, sometimes the main shows of these, the Game Awards associated events, are kind of lackluster. And so going into this one, you know, we're like trying to get hype, but we're like, God, we're probably just going to end up falling asleep out of boredom. It's going to be such a bad time. Da, 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 da. Well, the top highlight for me is the announcement that Final Fantasy VII Remake 3 is Final Fantasy VII Revelation, and it's releasing in like 9 months. What the fuck?
Yeah, boy!
I am so hype. Everything they showed looks so good. Even just the name, I'm like, oh, it's just Revelation, like singular. It's not Revelations, like this type of naming convention normally would go. So I'm fascinated. Is that a singular revelation in particular? What is it?
They're all gay.
I mean, look at their hair. Several of them, I would accept it. The airship looks so fantastic. The method for deplaning is so freaking cool. Like, you just straight up jump out the airship. That's so cool.
Yes.
I was just really surprised and delighted by like every aspect of this announcement. And it was really funny because for me, I was saying for months, I've been saying for the better part of a year now, I've probably said it on the air on this show, one of the reasons I've been so excited for 7 Revelation coming out of the shadows has been for Kingdom Hearts 4 to potentially get a chance to shine, you know, after it releases, maybe, but IDK, Summer Game Fest, you know, be crazy.
I don't know. I think it's going to be a long time coming before we hear anything about Kingdom Hearts 4.
Yeah, right? What were your thoughts? What were your top highlight?
Yeah, like, I honestly was kind of not expecting any Square Enix news, or at least nothing, like, big like this.
Yeah, not out of Summer Game Fest.
Yeah, like, I was like, I kind of went in with low expectations, honestly. So I was legitimately shocked and shook. Like, obviously we talked about on air that it was pretty far along in development, but like, girl, it's ready to come out of the oven and it looks so good. I believe that I've talked about, you know, on the show, specifically with our Game Buoy remake project, kind of one of the catalysts for, you know, doing that project was to talk about the remake games and like what a great job they've done. They've really been some of the highlights of my gaming experience in the past 5 years, you know, in the time where we were on an unfortunate Buoy hiatus. It also really, this remake trilogy has given me a deeper appreciation of the compilation of Final Fantasy VII as a whole. Like, you know, I always talked about, oh, yeah, VII's fine, but VIII's way better. Like, you know, VII may have lacked polish and had some script issues with the translation, but like, no, a really, really, VII is amazing. Like, I really truly appreciate it now more than I did as a teen. I am a huge Cid and Vincent fan. Let's go. I can't wait to play as both of them. They are also husbands. Thank you very much. My final thought is, girl, the Fitz system. I'm gagged that they basically brought back dress spheres from Final Fantasy X-2. I also love that others in the VOG chat were saying, like, oh, yes, dress spheres. Like, yes, bestie, same mind.
Yes, I was likewise gooped. I've said it here a ton of times. I love job systems, and dress sphere is literally just dress up job system. So I'm so excited about the Fitz system also.
Yeah, like, no, I also love job systems so much.
The way they're expanding the scope with each installment. So like Remake was already obviously a divergence, but in a lot of ways it was pretty true to the original, where then Rebirth, like, they sort of diverged even further. And now I'm like, girl, we're talking about a whole ass job system in Final Fantasy VII. And I'm like, let's go. I'm hella down. But like, really, just like, my mind is blown by the scope of what we've seen. And like you say, we've talked in previous episodes about how we were expecting when 7 Remake 3, as we used to call it, we thought when it came out of the oven that we would be surprised by its state of completion. But I am still like shocked at how complete and how much larger in scope it appears to be than I had expected. I'm really very excited for this release. And it also, just like I said, it makes me excited for the larger Square Enix output as well, because it really feels like their teams are starting to level up a little bit, and it's exciting to see.
Yeah.
Let's see. Another announcement at this event that had me super hype was the Street Fighter VI Season 4 reveal, as well as the Virtua Fighter Crossroads title announcement. I'm a big fan of both series, and we've talked about both of these here on the show. With Virtua Fighter Crossroads, I was really excited that the VI was highlighted in the trailer to imply that this is Virtua Fighter 6. I assume that if it is successful, they will treat it as a mainline title, but it's sort of right now being treated as a soft spinoff in case it's, you know, not successful. I'm hoping it works out. I know a lot of Virtua Fighter fans were really excited. They did kind of like a Virtua Fighter Crossroads Direct and showed more gameplay there later. Looks like it's coming together really well. For Street Fighter, I think the obvious big deal news is Tifa coming to Street Fighter VI from Final Fantasy VII, which is honestly pretty hype. But I'm actually even more excited for the fact that the other four characters on the Season 4 roster are going to be newcomers. I'm really excited for multiple newcomers. I assume that's one of those weird getting older things where I no longer want to see everyone come back and I want to see newcomers, whatever. But what about you?
Yeah, like, obviously we had been hearing the rumors about our girl Tifa. She's going to be so fun to play in Street Fighter VI, I think. You know, I enjoyed it a lot at launch, Street Fighter VI, but I really didn't put a lot of time in during Seasons 2 and 3. I don't even know if I own any of those characters, to be honest. So I expect this will get me back into it. I actually have a copy on Switch 2, because that came out on a physical cart, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, I want to support physical media, so I picked it up. I even have, like, the Amiibo card deck. They, like, there was like a GameStop like super sale for that, and
I got that Amiibo card deck during that super sale too, and I don't even have that game on Switch too.
Well, this might be a good time to do it.
Well, what I do have is this game on PS5, and I actually, and I'll talk about this during our let's play during our whatcha playing or what's up is what we call it. I've been playing Street Fighter 6 for the last couple months now, typically one night a week, either Wednesday or Thursday, while my husband is doing his online role-playing games. I've been doing casual matches with people off Discord. I'm still scrubby as hell, but it's been a lot of fun to play, like, and to be facing real humans rather than the computer, because I can just absolutely devastate the computer pretty reliably. But humans, without that pattern recognition, oh man, they fuck me up. I'm scrub as fuck.
Aww.
Anyway, we'll talk more about that off air. But yeah, if you're looking to get back into SF6, you know, I'll let you know it'll either be this Wednesday or this Thursday. I'll likely be doing another online night.
Nice. Yeah. And that has crossplay, right?
I think it does.
I don't think it has cross progression, but I do believe it has crossplay. And again, like, I really like the almost Smash Brothers like alternate control scheme that they
added. I think they called it modern and classic.
Yeah, like, I love that. I love it a lot. It's perfect for me.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool way to sort of level the field for people who just haven't been playing these fighting games for 20 years. Those of us who have been doing it, we do need that classic mode because that's how these games work for us. But if you haven't been doing it, you don't have that muscle memory, that reflexive, this is how you do A, B, and C. I think it's just a really, really cool innovation that levels the playing field for newcomers and makes it possible for us all to have a party.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then my final big highlight was the announcement, although it was a pretty slight announcement, was Guild Wars 3, which they say they're, you know, revisiting the concept of an MMO. Unfortunately, we just don't have a lot to go on yet. This has been a common complaint for me so far with this year's event. With spoiler vision, I can tell you it won't stay that way, but we'll get to it. All the same, Guild Wars 3 was an announcement that really got my imagination going. I had a blast with the first two Guild Wars games. At times, I felt like they were maybe a little slight or maybe didn't do enough, but the flip was that they were $50 MMOs that didn't have a sub fee. So in terms of scale and scope and getting what I paid for, those were games that I had just 10 out of 10 experiences with. So presuming Guild Wars 3 keeps with that paradigm, I will definitely check it out when it comes out. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah. Like, there wasn't a lot to go on, but I don't know why, but I felt like I was getting major action RPG vibes from it. I think that would obviously really appeal to my tastes. You know, especially because Blue Protocol left a very, like, I don't even think it left a poor taste in my mouth. I was like, wait, that was a cookie? It was like that wasn't even a tea biscuit, girl.
Yeah, it was like the slightest morsel. It really just gave me the taste for something more substantial.
Yeah, girl, fucking Xenoblade Chronicles is more of an MMO than Blue Protocol was. I'm sorry.
Girl, you're not wrong, though.
Yeah, big disappointment. But yeah, as far as Guild Wars 2, I didn't spend a lot of time with it. I think a lot of it was just that I remember this was during the World of Warcraft days, I believe. And I think a lot of our WoW guild was checking it out. And then they all kind of bounced off. I was like, oh, well, I guess we're going back to WoW. But I remember it being like a well-designed game. I feel like it did what it did well. I know there are a lot of people out there who still enjoy it. If it is a subscription fee-free game, I will probably certainly check it out. I love that, you know, games without a subscription fee, like, you know, kind of dip in whenever.
Yeah, I feel a lot less pressure to play games when they don't have that sub fee, and it ends up psychologically being kind of a big deal. I only can really handle kind of like one sub game at a time, I find, and that typically for me is Final Fantasy, because they have me hostage with my house situation.
Yeah. But we love it.
It is true. I do love it. I've been playing it so hard the last couple weeks because there's been the Make It Rain event going. I've literally made and spent like 2 million MGP.
Ooh, girl, save it for what's up. I joke.
Okay, I will. My next honorable mention is, or my first honorable mention for this show, that is to say, a game I'm really excited for, but which I just couldn't put as a top highlight. This is that Platinum Games is in charge now of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Last Ronin game adaptation. I was a big fan of the last Platinum Games Ninja Turtles game, and so I'm also a fan of the Last Ronin original graphic novel, although I haven't read, I know they've now done continuations. I have not read those, so no spoilers, please. Even though we didn't get to see much information or footage of the game itself, that combination for me, that's going to be a bingo. What about you?
Excuse me. Oh, that's a bingo. Yeah, you know, I'm honestly like very casual Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan. Like, I saw the movie, at least a couple, one or two of the movies as a kid. I watched the cartoons sometimes. I like the arcade game. That being said, Platinum is the perfect fit for the world's most fearsome fighting teams. You know, they are heroes in a half shell and they're green. Did you know that?
I did, in fact. This is one of those fascinating things where the just a year or two difference in our age makes a huge difference. Ninja Turtles for a year or two were my entire effing life. And I imagine that it was probably just a little when you were probably just a little too young to be quite so invested.
Absolutely.
Let's see. The next honorable mention for me, though, was the announcement of new Cupheads. I was really excited for the D-Make styled game. I'm into that. That's kind of my whole jam, my whole gameplay vibe. Obviously, longtime listeners know anytime this type of a game gets announced, it is like catnip for me. What about you, Saigi?
Yeah, you know, I always appreciated Cuphead for its super unique aesthetic. I feel like it also kind of set the bar for... or not really set the bar, but it's kind of set a trend of those old-timey cartoon games. Was it the Mouse PI or something like that was one that folks have been talking about. I do remember a lot of people talking about that. It was like Nintendo hard, punishingly hard. So I never checked out Cuphead, but this D-Make Mighty Cuphead Adventure looks really cute. Can we also mention that it's getting a physical Master System release? Like, I am sure that Brazilian Cuphead fans are going to be, like, all over this.
Truly incredible. The thing to me is, I had a Master System when I was a kid. The graphics on display in the trailer seemed ahead of what a Master System could do. So I'm assuming the Master System version will be a port. And so now I'm like... am I going to have to buy this game twice? Because I'll play the D-Make and the D-Make of the D-Make. That sounds meta fun to me.
Game Boy D-Make project.
Right. Let's see then. The last of my honorable mentions for this show, it's a pretty major one. We got the reemergence of the new Ueda game.
Yeah.
I am so excited. For me, it looked like I was seeing elements from all of the other Eco games, all of the other Ueda games. So, like, I was seeing bits of Eco, I was seeing bits of Shadow of the Colossus, I was seeing bits of The Last Guardian. And so to see all of it put into one and into a game where it felt like the engine was keeping up with what was happening and just, like, looking, like, high budget and beautiful at all times, I was shooketh. This was one that had me looking at my TV with my jaw dropped. So I'm definitely looking forward to learning more about this game and learning about what the emotional core of this game is going to be. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, that's kind of his thing, right? I thought it looked really, really great. Eco and Shadow of the Colossus are two cult classics that also are part of my gap in my gaming repertoire. So I know that at least Shadow of the Colossus was remade, right? Was it delisted or was just the studio that made the remake closed? But then there was also
they're delisted. I'm pretty sure the Shadow of the Colossus remake is still up.
And then there was like a PS4 double pack or something, I feel like. So like I really should play more games. But yeah, it looked really, really epic.
Yeah. All right. Well, we do want to keep this show rolling. We are getting long in the tooth and short in the show roll still. So I want to go over then our disappointments or other thoughts for this show. For me, I liked seeing Gundam Rogue Orbit, but they showed a lot of footage of like cinemas and stuff and very little gameplay. I'm into the aesthetic because I like Gundams, but I'm really going to need a little more info in order to give a shit. What about you?
I was literally in the chat like, what is this Gundam ripoff? Oh, wait, it's actually a Gundam game. Like, it didn't really, until it was very clear that it was Gundam, I was like, is this like trying to be Gundam? Oh, it is Gundam. So
you'll
probably get it. But whether you get it on sale or day one is another question.
Exactly. Let's see. There's a new Monster Hunter Wilds expansion coming. This is Monster Hunter Wilds Ascendance. It's exciting news, but given the life cycle the game has had, I'm honestly a little worried. I'm also surprised they didn't announce it at any of these events, but Capcom also did confirm a Switch 2 version of Wilds is in development during a recent stream, so like that's cool. Also, there was an announcement of a Code Veronica remake at this show, which is super funny to me because Capcom is doing everything they can to put off remaking Resident Evil 5. What was that? What were your thoughts on the sort of Capcom bunch?
Yeah, you know, like I have talked about on the show that I've tried to get into Resident Evil. It's not for me, but even I know that 5 is the problematic one. So like that's fine that they don't remake that one as far as I'm concerned. Like obviously also not being a Resident Evil fan, but following the buzz about it over the years, I know that Code Veronica is like considered to be one of the all-time greats. So like that is great news for them. I feel like the Resident Evil fans are eating really well over these past few years. Like the, you know, more modern releases have been really well received and getting these remakes of beloved ones. As far as Monster Hunter Wilds Ascendance, you know, I talked on our 2025 Bowie Awards that I really liked that game a lot. I know it was polarizing. I just hope it gives the game a new lease on life because, like, I have not touched a game in months. But I liked it. It's just that, you know, I didn't feel compelled to keep coming back for, like, you know, the new monsties that they added and stuff.
Yeah. Let's see. We also got a new trailer for Stranger Than Heaven. I was going along with it initially, as I think it looks mostly good. But I have to be honest, I don't really like the inclusion of Tupac in this game for reasons that are pretty complicated. It's not just that he's dead, I'll note. It's that he died before he could, I would think, be a fan of this series or these people making this game. And I just, even if they got permission from the family, although State, even right, that yeah. has been, yeah, well, that's precisely the thing is that there's actually some complex situations involving the estate and the family. And I don't know. I just don't think that this is one of those things where I've said in the past, you know, including dead Japanese action actors in Japanese action games makes sense to me. If this were like Tupac was an actor, I loved him in Poetic Justice, but this isn't the kind of role that he was doing, what they showed in Stranger Than Heaven. It's just not a good fit, in my opinion, and I'm trying really hard to be open-minded, but it just feels like a bad fit to me, and I don't like it. And it's, again, I'm from a place where, and I'm of a place and time that Tupac is one of the closest things I have to a sacred cow. So it's like Tupac and Kurt Cobain. Okay. So like it's, yeah. Oh, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, like the other part of that as someone who is very much into narratives and storytelling, like I thought this game was supposed to be covering multiple time periods from the early to mid 20th century. Like, and it seems to be confusion whether it's his likeness as an original character or it's actually Tupac. Like, I feel like I've heard both. Like, I was like, oh, wait, the character is just, like, Tupac is the actor visually, but then the voice is not going to be him. Like, I do feel like the information we got out on the internet is that it won't have an AI voice. It'll probably be someone, you know, who is kind of like a voice, a similar voice to Tupac's, but I'm just like, what are they doing here? And then, you know, the director of the game is leaving, so I'm a little dubious about this one, to be honest.
Yeah, I previously had been really, really excited for Stranger Than Heaven, but some of these choices, yeah, I'm a little more skeptical now, I find, which was probably not their intention with this promotion. Let's move then to our final thoughts and letter grade for this show. Let's see, for me, probably one of the other big highlights that I didn't mention, because it was such a small detail in this show, was that Star Wars Zero Company got a release date. That's my one of my 2026 like most wanted titles. So that was a big, big plus for me. But other than that, this was a stupendous show full of games that I'm excited to play eventually. But or I should say, so as a result, I would like to give this one a B based on the content, but based on the gameplay light trailers and lack of release windows slash dates, I'm going to go with a B minus.
Yeah, I agree. Final Fantasy VII Revelation did all the heavy lifting here for me, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if it had not been for that bombshell at the end, it would have been an A plus for the experience of watching it with Bobby and Rob and our lovely, beautiful listener and VOG community members. But it would have been more like a C if not for Final Fantasy VII, which I feel like Final Fantasy VII Revelation being part of a B minus, like, that's not fair to them. Like, it's they did all the work in the group project here.
Yeah, yeah, I see that. Let's move forward. We have gained a bit more momentum. Let's keep that up. This is the Microsoft Game Studios Showcase and E-Day Direct from June 6th, 26. I will note in advance, I technically watched the E-Day Direct, but I did not really care, so I was not paying that close of attention. that having been said, my top highlights for this show, the first one was definitely the Castlevania Belmont's Curse trailer. It's going to be launching October 15th for the PS5, Xbox Series, and PC, and then later in 26 for Switch. I thought it was fantastic to get an extended gameplay look at the Castlevania revival. I'm really excited for this one. I think the aesthetic is really cool. I had been really worried about it not being like a blocky pixel-based aesthetic, but it is definitely winning me over. What did you think?
Yeah, I really like the aesthetic. I, you know, definitely don't have the level of Castlevania experience that you have had. I know people were iffy on this one, I feel like, when it was first announced, so I kind of wonder, I didn't see a lot of people talking about it, so I have to wonder if the people who, and maybe it was just my perception, but I feel like people were not impressed when the original teaser was released. So, you know, I wonder if opinions have shifted on this. I'm glad that Konami is bringing Castlevania back in some form that's not patchy slot.
Yeah, I definitely think the vibes are getting better by the moment on this one. Let's see then. We also, and I guess I should note, my notes for this were written contemporaneous to when the events happened. This note is a little different now. The new Senua game really got my attention. They didn't show enough for me to understand what it's all about, but Ninja Theory Against All Odds has become a studio I pay a lot of attention to, and which we will talk about a little more later in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad about, you know.
Yeah. Then, that highlight changed a lot in tone because of what has happened. But I guess that, honestly, that's important and why I'm glad that time has worked the way it has worked in this case. Let's see, then. The other highlight for me was the Persona 4 revival and Persona 6 announcement.
Announcement? Really? That's what you call that?
Right. I am a little surprised that we saw so little of P6. Like, that was a tease of a tease, girl. But the visuals we did see track to some of the leaks. More importantly, or not necessarily importantly, but more immediately, P4R looks lovely. Very similar to P3R, seeing the Persona 4 cast realized in a more full form, similar to how Persona 5 had been done, is really great. And it really makes already a lot of the scenes that they showed in the trailer sort of breathe a lot more, like, and just sort of be a lot more visually interesting. I'm really excited for both of these titles, though, so I definitely needed to mention them both. What about you?
Yeah, like, it was silly how much of a nothing burger that P6 reveal was. Like, The only thing I got is, like, it seemed like it kind of had some sort of horror vibes. Like, it felt very, like, I don't know, like, did you get that vibe, too, where it was kind of like, ooh, are we in a graveyard, or what's going on here? So,
yes.
I like that, but, you know, it's really grasping at straws. Persona 4 Revival, I'm very excited for. You know, like, this is a particular situation where, like, the way that Persona 5 kind of, expanded the game world and stuff, and, you know, we've seen Metaphor, you know, really build on that as well. Persona 4 was great as it was, and Golden, for Persona 4 Golden as well, but, like, you know, I think in this case, like, you know, being able to have some of those more modern approaches to these games, and I'm really excited to explore Inaba as an actual town. You know, I want every day to be great at my Juness, or Young Life Junessu, if you're playing it in Japanese. The one thing that I'm a little concerned about, and we were actually talking about this off air, was that yesterday or a day or two ago, about how they might be handling Kanji and Naoto's stories. You know, we have seen them try to be a little more delicate with modern sensibilities in terms of what P Studio has been doing with, like, Persona 4 Royal, and I believe they also fixed some problematic things in Persona 3 what's the R stand for that one? But anyway, you know, we saw an image of, instead of where Kanji's in his dungeon and he has two male symbols, he's holding a male and a female symbol. It's like, are they going to completely heterosize him and just be like, oh, I need to man up? I mean, I know that's part of his story, but, like, part of it, there was definitely, like, oh, is, like, getting feminine stuff make me gay? And, like, I want them to lean more into that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm genuinely quite perfectly okay with him even coming to the conclusion that, oh, I'm not gay. I just don't want them to shy away from what I felt were very clear undertones. I mean, such to the degree, I think it's fine to have different interpretations of his story. But, you know, I recall back in the day, a lot of us and some of our legion of listener ended up having different opinions on what the themes of Kanji's story overall ultimately were really about. And I think that's valuable and useful. And I would hate to see that get filed down for the sake of, oh, we got to make sure everyone knows he's not gay.
Yeah, I mean, but also his dungeon had so much like that, like, hard gay.
Well, yeah, sort that's of what a... I mean. All of the baras, literally all of the rose stuff, all of the, you know, male
very
sign on male.
Very chillingly decoded, yeah.
The big men doing muscle poses, yeah, like.
I feel like we're just concerned about one screenshot. But, I mean, obviously my biggest hope is that they go full woke 2.0 and that we have bisexual Kanji and his trans boyfriend, Naoto.
That would be my optimal outcome, fully.
That's the subtext that I've always read out of Persona 4. But yeah. Anyway, enough of that. I think you have something more about sexy beefcakes?
I do. I have my mentions most honorable for this show. I want to start by mentioning Doom Dark Ages, which is getting some DLC. It is also presenting the Doomslayer as a sexy beefcake, which was literally not on any of my bingo cards ever, but I will absolutely take it. Right? I'm also very interested in the gameplay additions shown, but as I played the base game on Game Pass, I'm definitely not looking into rebuying everything right now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to probably just go unplayed, but I'll be a little interested in it. But that's acceptable. I ain't got to play everything. There's so many games out there, yeah. And just, I'm really just not wait into the consumer vibes of must do it all.
Yeah, just wait for the... I'm sure there's already lots of Doom Slayer fan art out there, so...
Oh, I'm sure.
We'll just eat that up. Yum, 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 yum. Like, I don't know if it's enough for me to actually want to try a Doom, but I like that Doom Slayer. Ooh, what? Oh, I do.
Let's see. It was also interesting to see what has become the annual look at Microsoft Airplane. they're doing really, really beautiful stuff. I'm not going to say what I was going to say because I see it's in your notes. I'll let you do it.
Yeah. So like when this trailer came on, it was showing all of these like national parks. And I was like, oh no, this is giving a little bit too much patriotic vibes, which like these days, like overt patriotism is a dog whistle TBH. But then it was just cute planes flying over the national parks and stuff. Like, honestly, like I never had any thoughts about playing Microsoft Airplane before this point. Like, I always assumed that those games were for a very specific sort of neurodivergence that is not my neurodivergence. But like, if it's just like flying over scenery and vibing, then maybe. I mean, if it's too much into the depth of the like controlling the pilot stuff, then I might get overwhelmed. But
I think there are more casual versions where you literally can just go up for a fly and just chill in the air and look at all the beautiful scenery.
That sounds like it would be great to do with some tasty treats, if you catch my drift. You know, airplane snacks, wink, wink.
Yes, I love airplane snacks. All right. We also had the announcement of another season of content for Sea of Thieves. I was a little surprised to see that it's still kicking, that it's still getting new content, that it is not in maintenance mode. And further than that, they're adding a creation suite. Like the game as a platform is getting larger. It's like season 20. Wow. I actually salute you guys on this one, truly. I don't think it has necessarily had a huge budget, but the fact that they've kept it going with new content for this long is genuinely awesome.
Yeah. You know, surprisingly, being a podcast pirate, I have not played Sea of Thieves. I might be overdue, and maybe we might have to create a SS buoy or something with the creation suite. Have to look into that. You know, I did want to highlight quickly a couple of other games that piqued my interest. Like, there's actually a lot of interesting stuff in this showcase. Vivarium is a life sim game that has a hand-drawn style that's very reminiscent of, like, early 1970s anime. There are two first-person games, Magician, The Devil's Deal, and Clockwork Revolution. They both kind of seem to be giving their own nods to Bioshock Infinite in a way. And also, despite having not really played a lot of Spyro, the little sneak peek of Spyro looked really cute.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see Spyro coming back. And several of those games you mentioned did also catch my attention as well. With that having been said, though, I want to move on to our disappointments and other thoughts for this show. My first one has to be, while I'm not surprised that they didn't acknowledge the ongoing BDS boycott calls against Microsoft, particularly for their gaming services, I would have been delighted if they had indicated any type of positive developments not supporting harmful actions against civilians here and abroad. I think it remains important to stand on business with regard to boycott calls. We cover Microsoft stuff here on a tentative basis when they had started talking about removing some of this stuff in the first place. Or making amends on some of these actions in the first place. But we are not yet in full support of them, and I think it really has to be noted.
Yeah. I also did not expect them to acknowledge the BDS boycotts, but I was kind of hoping, like, on my bingo card that maybe, like, I didn't actually make a bingo card, sadly, this time, but, you know, I was kind of hoping secretly in my heart of hearts that they would have. Like, if they had taken a strong stance against the harmful actions of their parent company, or at least what the parent company is helping fund through their ridiculous wealth, that would have gone a long way to make me an Xbox gamer again. Like, my Series X is literally just a 4K Blu-ray player, or I guess is that called UHD Blu-ray? I don't know.
Ah, and that's so funny because literally they use both terms, and I think it's one of those situations where it ended up muddying the waters for a lot of casual consumers.
It was like Blu-ray and HD DVD all over again.
Right? Except when it was really only one thing.
They're the same picture.
Let's see. Then my other or next disappointment. I was expecting a larger focus on Xbox as a brand slash platform, and we got nods in that direction. But in a general sense, this felt more like Summer Game Fest Part 2 Microsoft Boogaloo, where if you have a modern PC, you're effectively already set for all the games here. This is good and bad, all depending on your general view. Asha Sharma made a comment a few days later, basically suggesting that she knows their current lineup is thin, they're in a replanting phase, and when it's successful, more exclusive titles will come. But I don't exactly like exclusives, but I do think the market has shown that they're important. So I've definitely got an eye on that, but I don't know. Vibes were weird, and it makes a little more sense now after the fact.
Yeah, you know, that's where that context is really interesting with the next 100 days memo. Honestly, like, and I will get to this a little bit when we talk about our grading about how I felt about this. Like, instead of being like, oh, I want to play Xbox, like, literally this presentation made me be like, okay, I'm going to invest in a gaming PC for the first time in many, many years. Girl, in this economy with those prices, this Xbox presentation made me go out and spend much more than I would have wanted to on a gaming PC. I know that they're only going to get worse as far as the prices.
The prices, but, yeah.
Know, yeah. More on that later. So yeah, basically it did nothing to convince me to play games on the Xbox platform.
Yeah.
I mean, I might use the Xbox mode, which is like the Steam Big Picture mode, when they decide to roll it out to my computer. Like, love fragmented releases of stuff. Cool.
Yeah.
That's what you get for being on a Windows platform, I guess. Which, again, I'm not thrilled about Windows, but the reality is that as far as AAA gaming and stuff, like, that is probably the best way to be a PC gamer at this point.
I don't know. I'm sure. Linux operating systems are starting to get there.
True, true.
Anyway, I want to move the conversation forward. This one is probably going to get the Buzz Killington Award for fastest hype instantly murdered.
Yes.
This was the announcement of a new Crazy Taxi game, which I think a lot of us were pretty hyped for. It looked decent, even though there were a couple of like odds and ends. And then the Steam page went up and had an AI disclaimer, which major bummer. What about you?
Yeah, at first I was like, yeah. And then I was like, nah. Ew, remind me to not start an Offspring tribute band. That was not good.
I would never recommend anyone do that ever anyway.
Hey, like, as far as I know, Dr. Dexter Holland is a pretty good guy.
Yes, good on them, and even delightful music. I just don't need to see a cover band. It's fine.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone could really do what the Offspring does. You know, he did his PhD dissertation on HIV related stuff. So, like, I just think he's really cool. But I do not think Crazy Taxi is cool. Like, I do know some people did not feel this was a deal breaker, but I know we're not the only ones out there who have had our opinions soured after that AI disclaimer. That's not really an Xbox thing, but it did kill the hype. Major Buzz Killington.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then let's move to our final thoughts and our letter grades. For me, this was as like a show slash software lineup, honestly, fairly strong for me, like a C, maybe even trending into like a B-. Probably like a C+. As a showcase for Xbox as a brand slash platform, though, this was more like a D. Some signs of life, more than I expected going into it, but not enough. It's one of those things where I have more confidence in the brand as of this presentation than I did 100 yeah. days before the presentation. But the funny thing is now, like 8 days after, more than like 14 days after the presentation, but whatever, I'm not really counting. I'm already have even less confidence in the brand than I did then. So
you had it. you had confidence and then you lost confidence.
Genuinely. So actually I had given this a D plus from averaging out that D and that, you know, C to B minus, but now I'm giving it an F based I'm giving it an F based on what has happened since the, no, maybe I say D minus because maybe it's not fair to judge the presentation on information that came to light after the presentation. No.
You remember Drag Race season 12? Sherry Pie got disqualified for being a sex pest?
Yeah, absolutely. And the same here. But not to spoil it, but like Microsoft showed us a game in this presentation that they have no intention of releasing. That's an F.
Yep. You know, this is what's so weird about this. If this was not a Microsoft presentation, if it was just, oh, cool games showcase or whatever, like I would have been honestly closer to a B plus. Like I was more into some of these games that even more so than State of Play. But the fact that like pretty much everything could be played on another platform, including PC via Steam, when it comes to looking at this showcase as a showcase for the Xbox platform, this reminds me of an anecdote from my third year of college. I was really burnt out. I used to cut class all the time to play the original Assassin's Creed and Animal Crossing Wild World. I've talked about that on air a little bit, I think, before. Definitely Wild World. But I also was playing a lot of Assassin's Creed around that time, the original one, on my Xbox 360, ironically. So anyways, in my junior year of college, one of the terms I had, like, it was a class on either 18th or 19th century British literature. Like, I'm honestly not sure because I never went to the class, which is very unlike me, but girl, I was burnt out, okay? So anyways, I showed up to the midterm, like, being like, oh, okay, you know, that's the majority of the grade is the midterm and the final. I can bullshit my way into a passing grade. I wrote what I felt was a great essay about a topic that I really didn't know anything about. And so I got the essay back because, you know, back then I don't even know, I guess they're going back to that now, but like it was all handwritten in one of those little blue books. No AI back then. Anyways, the professor left a comment saying, a well-written essay that completely misses the point, F. And that's what I'm going to give the Xbox showcase.
Damn.
Girl, this showcase did not make me want to play Xbox. It made me buy an expensive components for a PC. Like, that's pretty bad.
Indeed. All right. We are now much longer in the tooth than I wanted to be.
Yes, we are. Yeah. So
this is going to be the Nintendo Direct from June 9th, 2026.
Ooh, buckle in, folks.
And I'm going to go, right into my top highlight. We got the fucking announcement of Kingdom Hearts 4 out of a goddamn Nintendo Direct. What? How does that happen?
Well, re-announcement, but yeah.
Okay, we got the re-reveal of Kingdom Hearts 4 after four whatever years since that initial gameplay trailer, or reveal trailer, I should say, although it did have some gameplay in it. Like, what the fuck? Furthermore, we got the announcement of the Kingdom Hearts 1 through 3 native ports, including 1.5 and 2.5 on Switch 1, which we knew it could be done. There were a lot of signs pointing to the native ports as well. Wasn't expecting the announcement here at this event necessarily, but I'm delighted to have gotten it. There is already a demo up for Kingdom Hearts 3 if you want to see the performance on the Switch 2. I have downloaded it and played it. It is pretty comparable to playing Kingdom Hearts 3 on a PS4 in terms of like the heart station drop to the heart where you select your powers or whatever is a little framey like it was originally, but the actual toy box section of the demo runs at a reasonably locked frame rate that I was finding perfectly acceptable, so I'm pretty happy with the performance. I'm honestly stoked. I have so much I could say about this trailer, particularly about Xehanort's umbrella and the Dark Road finale illustration we had gotten, the notes about, you know, the light and dark that we're seeing in Quadratum having been brought there by Sora and Strelitzia. I think it's I think there's some pretty interesting implications between the pictures we saw last year and the trailer we just saw in terms of, like, I think this game is, like, further along than we realize. We just haven't seen a lot of specific areas from it. To that end, the thing that I'm going to really talk about, because I was going to note a lot more about all of these things, but we're just too long in the tooth for me to have time to do that now. I think we are going to get more trailers this year. In fact, I specifically think that at D23 in mid-August, we are going to get the announcement of our first Disney World. And I would also not be shocked if in the, call it 6 months following that, we didn't then get another trailer, either at like Tokyo Game Show or maybe the Game Awards. Based on what we have now seen for Kingdom Hearts, the announcement that Kingdom Hearts 4 is going to be across all platforms at launch, and frankly, how far along what we have seen in this trailer looks, and that is also to say the multiple slightly different versions of this trailer that have been uploaded across Square Enix's feeds, I think we're going to get an announcement of a release date window at the Kingdom Hearts anniversary event that's expected in March of 27. And I think we're going to be looking at only 28, which at this point is an only.
Yeah.
I was also really surprised in the trailer by the fact that there were multiple characters from Dark Road and even Missing Link present. They're going to have to do something about the stories in Union Cross, Dark Road, and Missing Link being broadly inaccessible to the player base right now.
3.9.
What are your thoughts?
Girl, when I was telling you that, girl, when I tell you that I was not expecting this, that I was shooketh by this, and that it literally brought tears to my eyes. Like, you know, obviously we are too long on the tooth to get too in-depth, but I just, like, Nintendo, you did the damn thing. Jolly good show, mates. I guess I have to buy all the games yet again. I don't have to, but, like, I'm going to buy them again for Switch 2, I guess. You know, the funny thing is that I don't know how much has come up in depth on our Game Buoy Remake Rebirth Revelation Revival era, but Kingdom Hearts is one of my all-time favorite franchises. I do think that we are going to definitely have to do a Road to Quadratum, a multi-part dream drop deep dive into the franchise. My experience was sorely lacking with the series back when we did a Game Buoy Micro way back in the day. You know, we did see that the Switch 2 box art did appear to be AI slop, which I'm not happy about. I guess that just means I'm going to buy it digitally, honestly.
Well, and so that story has actually advanced a good bit, which is why I didn't cite it in any of the show notes.
Oh, okay.
Right now,
I have to follow that.
Right now, it looks like Nomura had done an original art piece, but that in some of the uploads to it, they had, like, the likely publicity department or whatever had rearranged the original art using AI tools, which added and filled in details that were not supposed to be there. But because this blew up and there was such backlash, it has, like, the correct piece has been uploaded to most of the correct websites now in terms of the publisher websites.
Oh, good.
So, you know, I also will say big ups to the community for rejecting that shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also, let's see, had a highlight for me was another Square Enix announcement. This was the consolized version of Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, now known as Final Fantasy Resonance. I'm excited because this is a game I already liked that is being reimagined as a, you know, single player console Final Fantasy experience. It is in the HD 2D style, the first Final Fantasy game to be presented in this style. We're assuming this is being done by Team Asano following their work on Octopath Zero, which followed a similar approach. I'm not too worried about Team Asano getting pigeonholed yet. They have Adventures of Elliot that just came out this past week, and which I have played a little bit. It's pretty great. But I hope they get to continue doing titles like that, because I will get worried if, you know, this is very successful, Octopath Zero is very successful, and then Elliot is not successful, could create a bad outcome.
And everyone wants them to do Chrono Trigger.
Right. This is, that having been said, exactly the sort of thing we were hoping for when they did Octopath Zero. And with that having been said, you know, they talked a lot about how, like, Octopath Zero was being reimagined, and it's not a port of the mobile game. But, like, the game is so similar, Octopath Zero and the Octopath Travelers of the Continent or whatever, the mobile game, that, like, literally hackers for the PC version ported all of the characters from the mobile version that weren't in Zero into Zero from the mobile version, and it was reportedly a very easy port job. So I don't know that they're going to reimagine as much as people are expecting in Final Fantasy Resonance, but I also still think it's going to be worth checking out and having a good time with. Just have to note, we really need something to be done about the Kingdom Hearts mobile game stories. Huh? What about you?
Yeah. You know, I wonder if they'll have Dangerous Ariana as a playable character. Yeah, you know, I did not play Brave Exvius, so this will be great for me. It looks really lovely. I do hear your concerns. I feel like I should probably support The Adventures of Elliot, so that, presuming this is Team Asano, that they're not just pigeonholed into only making HD 2D remakes of mobile games and other games. Because, you know, like, was it Team Asano who did the Dragon Quest, or was he just involved?
I think he did.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, he's had other stuff. He you know, there was Bravely Default 2, right? He was involved with that. Triangle Strategy, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's they're not pigeonholing him yet, but maybe they will. Obviously, we want Chrono Trigger, we want Dark Road. So, I guess kind of pigeonholing Final Fantasy VI HD 2D. Maybe I am part of the problem. Maybe we all are.
Right. Let's see. The other big one for me out of the Nintendo Direct was the release date for Fire Emblem Fortunes Weave. And then also the news that we were getting Switch 2 editions of all three Xenoblade games. And then the announcement we're getting a new Xenoblade game. This was literally the type of day that we pray for in this house.
Oh my gosh, right? You know, as far as Fire Emblem, like, I actually have never finished one fully. I've gotten pretty far in a couple of them. I think it's just that I get distracted by something else. Fortune's Weave looks really good. It's wild because, like, I feel like just a year ago we were talking about that this was rumored and there was someone had it on their, like, LinkedIn or whatever, and now it has a full-on release date. I'll most likely check this out. As far as Xenoblades, I feel like I checked out Chronicles X on Wii U maybe, and just kind of again got distracted by something else. So I really had very little experience with the Xenoblades. They all looked so good on Switch 2. The fact that we would be getting Switch 2 editions for all of them, and the main trilogy plus a new one coming, like, that made me bite. I picked up Xenoblade Chronicles 1. I mean, it's not 1, you know, just Xenoblade Chronicles. I picked it up when it came out, and I will be talking about that briefly during What's Up, because getting long in the tooth.
Very good. Then let's do our honorable mentions. The number one for me is definitely Jujutsu Kaisen Survivaton. I am so hyped.
Getting a lot of mileage out of Survivaton. Yeah, I literally texted you when we were watching this. I was like, this game was made specifically for you.
Yeah. And also, I had the same vibe for the fact that they announced a One Piece Kairosoft game.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I actually clocked it as a Kairosoft game before I clocked it as a One Piece game.
That's so funny.
I'm really excited for, like, these smaller anime games being made by some of my favorite littler studios. I think this is so much more of an interesting approach than just having, you know, two or three studios pumping out arena brawlers every year. Even though there are smaller games, games that could be on phone, like, I just think that this is a better method for having anime games. And anime games are one of the big tenets of Game Buoy. So if you don't like anime games, fuck off.
I saw that was Sanji, I was like, love it.
Well, yeah, what did you think?
It looks really delightful. I don't have a lot of Kairosoft experience, really. Like, I have not played any of their games, to my knowledge. But it looks really cute. I saw other people talking about it. Like, you know, One Piece with the Netflix live-action show has been really, I think, getting a lot of people interested in the franchise, which is now one of my pillars of anime fandom. Like, I'm huge One Piece, so.
Yeah. Let's see. Then the last honorable mention I had was Dragon Quest Monsters: The Withered World. This launches December 3rd. I'll probably get it for like sort of my birthday game this year. But what I really wanted to highlight is that Square Enix were kind of weird, sneaky bitches. They announced this at that Dragon Quest announcement event last month that we talked about, and they were sort of coyly like, oh, we hope that we can get this game out before Dragon Quest 12 releases. And like a lot of people were like, oh, this must not be coming out for like a long time then. And then, no, it's, it looks pretty complete, and it's releasing this holiday.
Yeah, it looks really cute. You know, I believe in the past I mentioned that I really enjoyed the original Dragon Quest Monsters. I think it was Dragon Warrior Monsters when it was released on Game Boy Color. I did pick one of the recent Switch games up on sale a few weeks ago. Honestly, the performance of the game was really terrible to the point where I regretted even buying it on sale. But hopefully this one will be great because we love monster hunting games, monster collecting games, and monster hunting games.
It's always funny to me how sensitive you are about performance sometimes, because I also bought that Dragon Quest Monsters game and I have thought it was perfectly fine and fun.
For me, the camera was not it.
Yeah, no, it's, everyone has different tastes and, you know, different lines, and it's all perfectly good. It's just because I've heard you mention that a couple of times, and I just, for me, didn't have that experience. That having been said, it is time for our disappointments and other thoughts section. I wrote this out as, I'm sorry to that man that doesn't like JRPGs. I the only way I can really imagine someone having a wholly different view of this show is if their tastes, right, were like vastly different from mine. As it stands, like for me, this is the type of like E3 of dreams shit we used to talk about.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts?
When you said sorry to that man, it made me think of the infamous Keke Palmer sorry to this man meme.
No, that was the meme I was doing.
Good, good. I could see this man walking down the street. I wouldn't know who it is. Sorry to this man. Yeah, it was interesting. Like, I think that dissenting opinions are valid, and it was good to give me good perspective, but I was admittedly a little surprised that a fair number of my mutuals were seemed to be underwhelmed by this direct. That was definitely not the case for me, but again, I think that I am an unapologetic Nintendo fanboy, so it's good to have another point of view, but Nintendo Directs usually tend to knock it out of the park for me, and so, yeah, this was definitely the case with this one. I think this was one of the stronger ones, for sure.
Excellent. Then I was also surprised that we didn't hear about anything Mario mainline or Pikmin mainline. I was definitely expecting something in that direction.
Yeah. I was expecting, I don't know why I was like, I feel like we're going to see Pikmin. That would have been on my bingo card had I made one. I was not expecting like a new 3D Mario, but come on, we got nothing on Mario Kart World for like an expansion pack. But we did get the Pokopia expansion pack, so we can dive underwater with our besties and build Under the Sea, Under the Sea. That's going to be fun.
All right. Then the last one that I want to note here was that Capcom was present in a big way, which I liked.
Yeah.
I've heard that Resident Evil 9 has done really well on the Switch 2 platform, although I haven't seen specific numbers. I'm assuming that platform or publishers are finding that competent ports that are not late are a profit opportunity on the Switch 2 market right now. I know a lot of us have been saying this would be the case for years, but it's really nice to see that realized. So I hope that the companies that put in the work continue to find success so that we continue to see the support keep coming.
Yeah. So, girl, I see you. I see how you literally did not mention the Ocarina of Time remake teaser. This is a flashback to Classic Buoy, where you frequently talked about how much you disliked the Zelda franchise, except that you're actually a big fan of the Zelda franchise, LOL. But seriously, I want to make sure you have a chance to share your thoughts, if you have anything to say. But, like, honestly, there isn't a lot to say, is there? Because, you know, it's coming out this year, but that teaser trailer was, like, all teaser, no trailer. Like, I like the tapestry. I would buy one if they sold it with a deluxe edition, but... You know, the real tea is, did they need to remake Ocarina of Time? No. Will I play it? Of course I will. You know, I have to wonder if this is a younger team cutting their teeth on the franchise, and Aonuma-san is working on a swan song before moving on to a more, like, supervisory role like Miyamoto-san has been doing. I'm sure it's going to be lovely. I feel like it's something more than that Mario got for their 40th anniversary. But anyways, you know, I expect that your thoughts will be, like, yeah, I didn't even bother mentioning it because there was literally nothing to talk about. But Captain Spike, what are your thoughts?
The thing is, I'm sure it's going to be great for people who want to play it. But what they showed us was literally identical to the opening of the original game for like 20 frames and then nothing else. So for me, it's not really worth mentioning because there is literally nothing to talk about.
Oh, but at least you're not like, oh, I hate Zelda.
No, it's fine. You know, my thing is, I look at how direct it, just what we've seen literally looks like someone took a screenshot of the original game and repainted over it. And for me, it's giving very direct remake vibes. And for a Zelda game, a direct remake is what I want the least, because if the puzzles and stuff aren't going to be refreshed, for example, then I'm just going to breeze right the fuck through it. And it's not going to be as fun for me.
Yeah. Budget title status, but hopefully not that.
Yeah,
I just think it's funny that you used to be like, I don't like Zelda, but you love Zelda. Bitch, you love Zelda.
I have really reconnected with Zelda as a series because of and after the Breath of the Wild.
And Tears of the Kingdom,
Having the type of Zelda game that does what I imagined a more free Zelda game would do made it a lot easier for me to enjoy the more linear ones.
Oh, good.
Anyway, let's move on to our final thoughts and letter grade. For me, this is an A, baby. This was direct of dreams type shit here. I'm only leaving it at A rather than a plus because I want to leave them room to grow. But goddamn, girl, what about you?
Yeah, girl, that's an A. Like, I might even be so bold to give it an A plus because of Kingdom Hearts 4, but I think a good solid A is definitely in order. Very well earned. Girl, this is what I'm here for, girl. Like, oh, I woke up early and was not disappointed.
Yeah, right? No, I woke up early and I didn't even go back to sleep because I was so excited. It was like, all right, well, I'm up for the day.
Oh, I know. We were texting each other. I was in tears. I don't know if you were, but
no, I watched that trailer and watched online discussion of it, the Kingdom Hearts one in particular, for hours after that. Like, I'm so excited. Anyway. We have to wrap this up. We're way long in the tooth. We need to keep it moving.
Yeah. And we've got a part B to do.
Right? I'd like to wrap
up. Not today, thankfully.
Jeepers, right? I'd like to wrap up our discussion by asking you, what did you think of the shows we've discussed so far with regard to replacing E3? And what are your good and bad thoughts on the future of the Summer Games Fest meta event based on what we saw this weekend? For me, as far as the big three on main show go, it's taken a few years, but I actually feel like this year's Summer's Games Fest ranks up there alongside some of the all-time great E3s. And admittedly, I am talking about the high or the low end of high there, and I'm very biased, but it's like Final Fantasy VII Revelation and Kingdom Hearts 4 and New Xenoblade, and a ton of small to mid-range stuff that super appeals to me and to others, that stuff I wasn't even into, there was a ton of, but that other people are super hyped for. So for me, this was a good ass week of gaming news. Too bad about the weeks that followed. And that's Ooh. Even without getting to the smaller showcases that we will highlight in our next episode.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I do have concerns with the Game Awards as an organization. You know, there was the whole debacle with Future Class, and there was that one game that basically they set up to fail because it got so overhyped. On a macro level, although I do question some of the leadership decisions that Jeff Keighley and company are making, as far as the showcase, I really was surprised that this did give me E3 vibes all over again. Felt like back when we did our E3 buoy and did episode each day, like, girl, I can't even imagine doing that now in the modern era. In my old age,
you know, old age. I was, fuck you. I was literally just going to say, next year, if they do as well as they did this year, we might want to consider doing individual shows.
I'd be into that. Like, but I am glad that we split this into a side A and side B, because in hindsight, I almost wish we had been able to do, daily shows, because this is an overwhelming amount of games. Like, honestly, it is difficult for me to process all that information. It's mind-boggling, girl. Like,
that's why we still gave these shows high ratings, because there's still just such an incredible amount of games on display.
Yeah, I don't even know if side B, if we're going to even be able to grade them, because, like, you know, they're just showcasing so many great things. And
yeah, I honestly, for some of the smaller shows, I think it might be inappropriate to grade them.
Yeah, yeah.
But we will likely use that time to cover more titles per show.
For sure, yeah, yeah. I'm excited to talk about side B. A lot of, very diverse games out there, and I think that's good, and I'll talk more about that next week. But I guess now we had some high highs, and we got to go to some low lows, right? I'm not talking about Agerland.
We are actually going to do, and I'm just going to say it, we're going to do our Doom and Gloom segment as well as our Smash Hit segment. Now, after our discussion, we are going to try to keep it quick, but frankly, we were planning to not do Doom and Gloom and Smash Hit this week, and then the week that was happened.
The so-called Charmageddon.
Right.
And we don't want to miss this thing.
All right, thank you, all of this done and said, here's a little bit of Doom and Gloom.
Doom and Gloom.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit, rumor has it, although, like, news is evolving rapidly, right? By the time this episode goes up, we could hear some more about this. This is from a reliable source. This is from GamesIndustry.biz.
GamesIndustry.biz.
And they're reporting, per Jason Schreier at Bloomberg, you know, we love what he does over there, that Xbox is reportedly planning more layoffs as part of its Xbox reset. Reportedly, they are going to significantly slash budgets for marketing and other areas for business, and Xbox declined to comment. But hey, at least Game Pass is doing better, right?
Well, that's all right then.
Former head of Xbox Game Studio, Craig Duncan, who you might remember from Rare, of course, he's resigned after only 2 years in the role. At the time that we put this article on the show roll, I had not really seen any official reason given for his departure, but girl, I'm sure he saw the writing on the wall, especially after what we're seeing now. Per this article, which this one was over at Kotaku, which we will link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where you can find all the articles that we discuss. All of the folks at Xbox Game Studio will report up to the Chief Content Officer, who is Matt Booty. It's not a good look for Xbox. Hopefully Craig Duncan goes somewhere where he is appreciated. Maybe Rare could spin off and he could go to Rare. But hey, at least Game Pass is doing better, right?
Well, that's all right then.
But they're not gonna close any studios, right? It's just a rumor, right?
We have news here coming out of Ninja Theory that they have canceled the game they had in development, Project Mara. This was made so that they could, quote unquote, take the opportunity to have all the talent and expertise working together on the third Hellblade title, Senua, that was announced at the Microsoft event for Summer Game Fest, and which I was very excited about.
I thought you said Hellboy. I was like, huh?
Oh no, Hellblade.
Yeah. Hellblade. No, you said Hellblade. I didn't hear it correctly. Yeah.
And then we got word that with the developing news that Xbox is planning to cut several studios from its game division, many of us were shocked to hear that Ninja Theory was included in these talks because, you know, Senua was literally highlighted less than 2 weeks ago. Allegedly, according to reports, Stephen Totillo is the writer over at Game File. And it was particularly one of the newspaper columns. He basically reports that Xbox had already planned to sunset Ninja Theory as a studio or, you know, split with them if the funding is found. Even before the announcement of this title was made, and this announcement was done in the hope that they could attract investors for the studio. Now, that was the Microsoft plan. There is, to this point, still no confirmation that Ninja Theory was involved in this plan. Therefore, Microsoft very specifically showed us all a trailer of a game they didn't intend to release in the hopes that they could make some money off of the studio as they liquidate them. Ooh, I am so fucking heated. But, you know, Game Pass, I hear subs are going back up.
Well, that's all right then. But, you know, that's really sucks for Ninja Theory, but I'm sure the rest of the Xbox Game Studio portfolio is going to be fine, right? Right? I feel like I need to make a bunch of Anakin and Padme memes after this episode. Please look forward to it. So, per Jason Schreier at Bloomberg, multiple Microsoft-owned studios are in active negotiations to spin off as the threat of closures loom. Along with Ninja Theory, as you mentioned, these include Compulsion Games, which maybe isn't a household name for all. They made We Happy Few and last year's South of Midnight, but also fucking Double Fine. Fucking Double Fine.
God damn it.
That one burns me up. You know, I just hope these studios could get out while they can. As I said, I think Rare should get out as well. As far as Rare, this would be an amazing time for Nintendo to rekindle that relationship. Just saying. So remember, children, mega corporations are not good and not sustainable. And you know, there was a post over on Blue Sky from Casey Explosion, who is a streamer, a fairly well-followed streamer from my understanding. And the context here is that there was a post from 11 months ago saying, let's be 100% clear on this. Microsoft is investing $80 billion in AI. This is not conjecture or speculation. It is plainly in their own words back in January this year, which was...
Would have been last 25 year.
2025, yeah. They gutted a profitable games division because AI is the shiny new bauble. Then reposted this, reskated this, if you're nasty, just yesterday.
Yesterday,
actually,
as of this recording, yes, so yeah, on the 20th. Yeah.
Saying, Microsoft had $80 billion to piss up a wall on AI investment. And I don't want this fact lost when we're talking about studio closures. They had obscene amounts of money to throw at slot machines.
$80 billion to invest. But we're talking about studio closures of games, of studios that made popular and well-liked games that did make a profit, even if not as much as Microsoft would have liked.
I hope that the Discord sound filter didn't filter out my clapping. At least Game Pass is doing better, right?
Well, that's all right then.
Yeah, Doctor Who is not doing all right. Speaking of that joke.
Holy moly, right? Talk about doom and gloom.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. We also have word coming about a week after Sony's event. They published their PlayStation annual business report and removed mention of PC as one of their pillars. This, of course, tracks, unfortunately, with their recent comments about how they're going to be focusing more on exclusives and bringing their titles exclusively to PlayStation, unless they are multiplayer games, which they will allow to benefit from being multi-platform. I'm really, really bummed about this. In place of PC, many found that upon review of the annual business report, AI does appear to be a new pillar for them. They specifically cite that they plan to use AI to, quote, unleash the creativity of studios and further enhance the PlayStation experience, as well as improve productivity through the use of AI-powered tools and reinvest their time into building richer worlds and gameplay experiences. All of which, for me, kind of underlines, kind of what you did. I think the era of the PC is about to be upon us again. I'm glad I have a PS5 because I do want to play God of War Lafay. But otherwise, what was that?
I said, big time. But
right.
Yeah.
But otherwise, moving forward, Sony doesn't sound like I want to be in bed with them any more than I do Microsoft.
That was kind of what I was thinking when I invested in this PC. I think it's going to be PC and Switch 2 for me moving forward.
Yeah, for real. Let's see. And then last, but certainly not least, we also had word that Ubisoft, as noted, we're including it still in rumors. We still haven't had a lot of hard details on these Ubisoft closures, but it looks like they are cutting roles worldwide and that the expected locations to be most impacted are Winnipeg, Belgrade, and locally here at San Francisco. So our hearts and thoughts go out to anyone and everyone impacted. We hope that the future finds you better and more gainful employment.
Yeah. And then Barcelona, right, got cut. And then, it's just.
All right. All that having been said, we must race forward like crazy taxis. So let us go to our smash hit.
I'm not going to wear my Pride baseball hat for the smash hit.
Let's see. This one comes to us via aftermath.site. We are big fans of Aftermath. That's why we shout them out every episode. This one is titled Vague AI Disclosures Aren't Helping Anyone. This one is published by Nathan Grayson. The thrust of the piece is basically, you know, the Tomb Raider remake that we mentioned had a AI disclaimer. Crazy Taxi has an AI disclaimer. But in both cases, we don't know the context to which the generative AI is being used. We had a situation where one of the Tomb Raider Lara Croft devs was unable to explain exactly what he meant when he said that AI allowed them to visualize quickly what various, you know, gameplay solutions might look like. And, you know, the reporter was like, what does that even mean? And then a rep straight up shut him down from answering. We have this quote from Sega about the Crazy Taxi thing. You know, we utilize generative AI as a support tool for developers aiming to provide better content to our users and enable developers to focus on more creative tasks. We have used such generative AI support tools during development of Crazy Taxi. No AI was used in reference to the performers in the game. And so it's like, okay, that to me sure does sound like there's AI content in your game and you're just trying to be like, we didn't use it for the character acting or whatever. It's kind of a bigger issue than just that one aspect. And, as Nathan notes in his piece, like, we really want to know, like, were you using AI for writing? Were you using it for assets? Were you using it for, you know, making in-game, you know, modeling work? Like, what's going on here? these vague disclosures aren't doing anything except putting a lot of us off the taste of these two particular games and any other games with these kinds of disclosures. And that isn't beneficial for anybody. More information would definitely be better so that we could make choices for ourselves the way many of us did with something like Expedition 33.
Yeah. Like, the thing is that, like, these quotes all kind of contradict each other. Like, girl, what?
Yeah. I'm not optimistic, if I'm being honest, about either of these games right now, but if they were direct and open and honest, at least we'd have that.
Yep.
All right. That's it for our segments that have been put out of order. We're going to get back on track, start our exit lewd with what's up. We are going to do our best to keep this swift. So honestly, I may revisit some of these talking points next episode. Please look forward to it.
Yeah, with that keep it so swift, you could call us Taylor.
Ah!
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, the first big game I played this week was Final Fantasy XIV. As I had noted, I'm very close to finishing my leveling journey, which was never really a goal for me until very recently. For the longest time, it was just a thing that was happening in the background, but since I didn't like healing and I didn't like tanking, I didn't really care. That is no longer the case. I still don't really care for healing, but I'll do it and can do it. I effing love tanking. And now I'm at the point where I only have 3 jobs to level. 2 of them are within their final 10 levels. So TBH, the next time we record, that number might well be lower. There was also a new Cosmic Exploration world added. I've already finished it for Minor. I am deep into Botany and Fishing. There are new mounts, which is exciting. I was chasing the mounts when I wrote this note, but I think I actually have all 4 of them now. Which, I mean, that's how time goes, right? And now that a lot of us dedicated people have it, wait another week or two and you'll start seeing them on the auction house cheaper. What about you?
Well, I first just want to congratulate you on your jobs maxing for Final Fantasy XIV. That's what I'm calling it. That's how the kids talk LOL. These days. I am similarly jobs maxed, for sure. So for me, I don't have as much, like, in terms of leveling to catch up on. In terms of recent content, there is a new custom deliveries where you just have to deliver crafting items. But they often have very cute rewards. This one is Aunt T's Tacos. And there's going to be an Eat Tacos emote that is at the end of when you max out friendship or whatever with her. So
yeah, I think I'll have mine this Tuesday.
I think so, too. So see you next Tuesday eating tacos. you know, otherwise, in terms of, like, everyday content, I have, for the most part, been doing a weekly treasure maps with some friends over on the Crystal Data Center. So that's really fun. I'm hoping that at some point that I can do some maps with all y'all, by which I mean you and Sulker, because they're super chill and super fun. I also ended up making a very sexy Roganin over there to play with some of those folks over there that are they're cool peeps. I thought it would be kind of cool to experience the game again from level 1 and kind of revisit A Realm Reborn through the perspective of, like, you know, going through it rather than doing New Game Plus and just, like, insta-killing all the mobs and stuff. So, you know, he's still pretty early on. I just literally did Sestasha, the first dungeon, like, the other night. And he is currently a pugilist and a marauder, so he'll be a monk warrior. Because as much as I love jobs, systems, and games, this game is really not alt-friendly. So I did not have the time, energy, or desire to be jobs maxing on another character. So, you know, my character that I play over on the Aether Data Center with you and Sulker, that's always going to be my go-to guy.
But it's kind of funny because he actually started as an alt when you and Stalker were on an extended break from the game. You know, then I ended up bringing him over to our current server. Speaking of which, we've had some frontline fun. We did that variant dungeon, the Merchant's Tale. I really love those variant dungeons. They're really cool. You mentioned the Make It Rain campaign at the Gold Saucer. I love the new Air Force One map. And I've just been working on gearing and such as you do. Funny enough, my new gaming PC runs like a dream, honestly. But Final Fantasy XIV is the only thing that I've installed at this point because when I have been playing on the PC, that's all I've been playing. I have not only been playing Final Fantasy XIV, but I honestly would say that it's at least on par, if not better, than the PS5 Pro, but oof, my wallet. Also, just a shout out, any lovely and beautiful listener who plays Final Fantasy XIV, especially on the Aether Data Center, you reach out and we can play. If there's enough of you out there, we could even do like a Game Buoy cross world link shell or something for lovely and beautiful listener. What about you? What else have you been playing?
Let's see. The other game I spent a lot of time on this past, I always just say week, but you know, I guess it's actually been several weeks, was Mina the Hollower. When I wrote this note, I could not put it down. That obviously resulted in me finishing the game pretty fast. This is one that will be coming up during our GOTY discussions at the end of the year.
Hell yeah.
I really had such a blast with how this game unfolded. It is very much in the style of Link's Awakening, very directly, but the overall structure of the world is more influenced by the Soulsborne games. So there's a lot of like very little direction, a lot of like NPCs that you can interact with in kind of unexpected ways that end up giving you cool rewards if you do the correct things. A lot of like environmental interaction, a lot of the kinds of stuff that I actually feel is missing from 2D Zelda, as well as, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's so hard. I didn't find it that hard myself. However, I also note there's also like a ton of customizable parameters so that you can customize, like you can make the enemies hit weaker, or you can make it so that, you know, you don't take damage from falling into pits. Like literally you can just make it so that the difficulty of the game is tuned for your difficulty setting, which I think is really, awesome. Really. Yeah. Right. I think it's really cool. Playing a Zelda style game in the very direct style of Link's Awakening, where all of the dungeons and game world, rather than being designed around like, oh, you'll have X, Y, or Z item, is instead just designed around, you have these abilities. Can you figure out how to use them to finish this screen slash puzzle? And having the whole world be open world, for me, was like a revelation. It was very much like, oh, it's almost Breath of the Wild in a 2D Zelda game.
Like that prototype of Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, right? I ended up having such a good time that I did a 100% item complete run for my first run through. And I had a real blast. I really enjoyed the ending. I felt it to be really contemplative and philosophical, despite that maybe not being what you would expect from this kind of game. I'm seeing online a lot of controversy in terms of like half of the audience really likes the ending and half of the audience really dislikes it. That's always the kind of ending I'm most excited about because I feel like an artistic statement has been made. And that is how I would describe Mina the Hollower. There is a point. It does make a statement. And I think it's pretty good and pretty relevant for 2026. The last thing I'll say is that I really liked the fact that even until the last 2 or 3 hours of the game, it was still up until the very end doing new and exciting and interesting things within its own game engine that really left me stunned at their own creativity. I'm really, really excited to see what Yacht Club does in the future, because for me, is another grand slam from them.
Excellent.
So what else have you been playing?
For my next one, as I mentioned during the Nintendo Direct discussion, I picked up Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, Switch 2 Edition. What I was immediately struck by as someone who had very limited Xenoblade Chronicles experience, and it might have even been a demo, like I might have been hallucinating that, who knows? That was a lifetime ago during the Wii U era. But
I was immediately struck by, and I made that joke a little bit, that, you know, about that, it's a better, Zeta Blade is a better MMO than Blue Protocol, but honestly, like, you can really see how influential the original Xenoblade Chronicles has been on the kind of modern action RPG design, as well as, like, MMOs as well. But, like, I mean, I think the fact that you can see the DNA of Xbox Chronicles and stuff like Final Fantasy 16, right? I mean, which basically plays like a single-player MMO, and, like, I mean, even, like, Skyrim was doing that shit a couple of years later, right? So I never really realized just how influential it was. You know, it does seem a little action light, but just everything about it was like, wow, I understand. I really firsthand understand the impact of Operation Rainfall. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing more. I'm very early on, but I already find the characters very endearing. Dunban is dead, definitely daddy. Happy Father's Day to him. Shulk and Ryan are very twink and his himbo boyfriend. I just have to say, obviously, I knew Shulk in the booty shorts was a meme, but like now that I'm in game and unlocked the booty shorts, I'm like, oh yeah, they're going to be wearing booty shorts the whole game. And usually I don't do that unless we're talking about Frank West and his boxer shorts, but there's kind of a whole other level to that. That gets a little erotic, if you want to be honest. So anyway, we better move on. What else have you been playing?
Yeah, so I've been playing Adventures of Elliot. I started off with the demo after I finished Mina the Hollower because the full game was still a couple of days off. The full game only just released a couple of days ago now. So I was talking about this maybe being on Monday or Tuesday. So I started up the demo. I hadn't played the prologue demo yet. The previous one was like the concept demo that the Team Asano does for all of their games. I had played the concept demo, loved it, hadn't played the prologue demo, which is the one that carries your progress forward if you play the full version. I ended up playing the demo and really having a real blast with it. It is very much like a 16-bit era action RPG with the presentation and some of the quality of life stuff of a 2016 action RPG. For me, this is a very good combo. It's kind of giving like Secret of Mana vibes, especially since you have a like quick summon menu you can bring up. You can at any all times choose which two weapons you have equipped, one in one button and one on another, sort of like the Zelda games or particularly Link's Awakening, funny enough. But you can quickly call up this weapon wheel and equip any two items. You don't always have to have your sword equipped, so you can be like a spear and bombs, or a bow and arrow and I don't have that many, but like a boomerang. So far I only have like six weapons, but also six weapons, that's pretty cool. It kind of is all in that regard giving me Secret of Mana vibes, where like the excitement of Secret of Mana was like having your eight weapons and you're upgrading them all individually and getting them new abilities or what, or power, or yeah, getting them new power and stuff. And that element is present in Adventures of Elliot. And then there's also like a collectible magicite system, which are like equipable upgrades that let you further tailor your weapons to your playstyle. So you can like equip a fire sword magicite, and then your sword will now have fire on it, and like a lightning spear magicite, so that you'll have a lightning spear. And it's just really neat to have so much customization in this style of game. It's just a really good combination of influences. It ends up playing really good, and I'm really happy with it. I did end up buying the full version, so I anticipate I will talk about this one more in the future. Excellent. I believe you had one more you played this week?
I did. I played the Star Fox demo, you know, in yet another gap in my gaming experiences. I really did not have a lot of experience with Star Fox games. But I was like, you know, the demo, that's why I love a demo. You could see if it's for you. I had such a good time with it to the point where I pre-ordered it. I really enjoyed the cutscenes. I'm not sure how much of that aspect was in the original besides the little, like, you know, talking heads. But the way that they have...
Literally just the talking heads.
Yeah, so, like, being able to see the very playful, heated rivalry between Fox and Falco was super fun to see. And yes, I chose those words intentionally. Sorry, not sorry. I do have to note that I like that there are third person and first person
modes. I don't know if that's always been the case, or if it's always was just third person primarily before or whatever. Like, again, I am honestly very, very limited with Star Fox experience. So, doing a barrel roll in first person mode made me hella dizzy. So, like, I will probably just be playing in third person mode, but, this one's coming out in a couple days. So I'm really excited to check it out. And like, I don't get what people are saying about like, oh, they look weird. I guess that they're not like total beefcakes, but I think they look great, and I think it really captures the original art style from like the original box art and stuff. Like, I thought they knocked it out of the park there. Like, I guess if you want like super sexy stud Star Fox, like that's what the Mario movie is for, and the inevitable spinoff movie.
All right. We are far long in the tooth.
Ooh, yeah.
I was going to talk a little bit about my experiences playing Street Fighter VI, but you know, I mentioned them earlier in the episode, and presumably I'll have more experiences next week. So I'll just move that one on next
maybe
week.
Maybe with me even, you never know. Yeah,
very well possible. So with all this having been said, I would like to direct you to begin the exit loot, Slaggy.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I am not going to read every single social links question of the week. We did one for each day, even though we did not do each episode or one episode for each. So I'm going to read the social links question of the week that says, hello, folks. Now that Summer Game Fest 2026 has wrapped, what were your overall impressions? Did it live up to your expectations? Were there any notable surprises or disappointments? We had a reply from Orange Wright over on the VOG Network Discord saying was surprised to see a new stuntman game in the state of play. And it's interesting to see it based on real movies this time. Definitely something to rent. Oh, yeah, I guess you can rent games, can't you? Forgot about renting games. Blockbuster status. Summer Game Fest was pretty all right, which makes this year's one of the better Summer Game Fests. If I was more into horror games, it would have been the best of the shows this season. It was cool to see that Cuphead Sega Master System game. I would have never thought we'd see a Master System game on a big event like this. Also, Tifa and Street Fighter 6. Woohoo! I didn't watch the Xbox showcase, but I know I would have been very excited to hear. I had to do that again. I love playing through the original Crazy Taxi, and the trailer looked like a good evolution for the series. Too bad about the little disclaimer that happened after that. The Nintendo Direct may not have been so mind-blowing, so I was really hoping to see gameplay footage of Duskbloods, but it was cool to see Kingdom Hearts 4. Ocarina of Time remake, I really need to play through the original. I know, I'm a fake gamer. Absolutely, you are not. I've talked about all of my gaps. I hope that you have the chance to experience it, and thank you so much for all your wonderful comments, right? We'll be sharing a few more social links next time during this the Side B episode, you know, that are focused on the other showcases during the Summer Game Fest festive season. If you haven't answered yet, and presuming that this is up before we record Side B, there will still be time to answer them. If not, then this part might be edited out. That being said, we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. You can find us over on Blue Sky at GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
Mastodon at GameBuoy at mstdn.games.
Mastodon at GameBuoy at mstdn.games.
And everybody's doing the emails, and you can email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
Email us at gamebuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
With an actual dot. I'm starting to turn into Jerry Seinfeld here. What's the deal with gamebuoy.org? And if you'd like to see or hear GameBuoy somewhere where it is not currently, the podcast landscaping has changed a lot in the past few years. Still RIP Stitcher Radio. It was a good one. We'd love to know where you'd like us to go, and we'd like you to go to Friends of Buoy.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
Yeah, as ever and always, I'd immediately like to direct you to Orange Lounge Radio 2DX, where every geek has a voice, our friends and inspirations. Please join us in looking forward to the new OLR 2DX Odyssey. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the darn time and strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as support them if you like what they do. We'd also like to put you in the direction of The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out. I'd also like to put Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast, on your radar. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s, to Spectacular, Ultimate, and beyond. And last, but only least in terms of length, is Neo Geo Go. Aaron and Andre take on the Neo Geo library chronologically and quickly. Slaggy, what about you?
I would like you to check out the Bobby Blackwolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. Of course, Bobby Blackwolf is one of the co-founders of the Voice of Geeks Network, of which we are proud to be members, and hope that we are not embarrassing our VOG fathers, as I like to call them. Bobby and Rob are our VOG fathers. Happy VOG Father's Day to them. I'd like to shout out to the Nintendo Pow Block podcast, a dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo. I'd like to give a new to Game Buoy shout out, but a long, long overdue shout out to Super Philip Central, a long running video game blog that is your source for video games with a heroic touch. Major shout out to the dedication of our good friend Phil for what he's been doing over there. Similarly, a longtime friend of the show, Standard Issue Computing, is a Blue Sky account and a blog for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. He's playing some original EverQuest, like not even holding out for Legends, just like it might have been EverQuest 2, but yeah, good times. Sausage Retrobytes on Blue Sky, one of my favorite accounts, for bites of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. Always a delight to see on my skyline. Defunct Games is your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old school magazine analysis. And Thomas Game Talks on YouTube is where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises. And she definitely thinks Link is hot, so it'll be interesting when Ocarina of Time 26 comes out. And speaking of Zelda and Ocarina of Time and music, our wonderful theme music was done by the late great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous phonic sound. Thankfully, the legend continues in the form of ZREOS Second Quest, so go and check them out and show your support today at ZREOSQ.com. And shout out to my hot robot boyfriend, Craig, our robotic recording engineer. Without him, Game Buoy would not be possible in the modern era, so definitely check out the Craig Discord app for your recording needs in terms of disco.
Did you say disco recording needs?
I actually did, and I feel like I should be doing like those medicine, like because gas with oily discharge, diarrhea, and chronic constipation.
I would watch that. All right. In the coming days, we're grilling up some summer fun with more Game Fest to come. We've also got to look at some of our favorite sunshine seasonal games, and there's still that little something from Mother's Day floating around out there. So please stay tuned and look forward to that. But until
Mother's Day after Father's Day.
Right. Until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And see you, Space Cowboy.
Some people call me Maurice.
Woo! Woo!
Are you the pompous of love?
Please don't read no casting recalls.
Daddy?
Now recording.
Daddy, happy Father's Day!
Please don't read no casting recalls.
I don't want to waste your time, so I'm just going to use AI to summarize this article.
Please don't read no casting recalls.
You know, this was fresh off of their summer fresh off of their summer.
Please don't read no casting recalls.
It featured a look at the unique spin on a campaign mode, which is also.
Please don't read no casting recalls.
I was like, no, I will shit myself.
Please don't read no casting recalls.
Track your body down, they'll spy it all around.
Please don't read no casting recalls.